Good evening, everyone. We're sure glad you're here. We've got a full house, and that's to be expected because we have some wonderful items on the agenda first to start with. As we begin our meeting, we want you to know that anyone here can speak on the agenda items if you want to, if you have any comments or anything like that on the agenda items as we go through the agenda. And all you have to do is raise your hand. Let us know that you'd like to speak. And we will start our meeting with the council prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. God of steadfast love, help us to know your truth in the midst of the confusing messages that surround us each day. Strengthen us to stay focused on you and the many tasks that have been set before us. Continue to give us integrity, wisdom, strength, and courage as we meet the assigned work before us. Bestow your blessings upon our city, state, nation, president, governor, and mayor, and all who labor in this city. Protect our defenders of freedom at home and abroad as they protect us. Hear us, O Lord, as we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item this evening on our agenda is the minutes, a consideration of the minutes from the March 11th, 2013 regular meeting, council.
Mr. Mayor, I move for adoption of our minutes.
Second. Okay. Any discussion necessary? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Under presentations, we're extremely excited tonight to have the two that we have. The first, a report from the Election Commission on special election held on March 12, 2013 to fill the vacant City Council seat. Key?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm representing our chairman, who's out ill tonight, Richard Johnson. So on behalf of the Aiken City Election Commission, I offer the following report. On March 12, 2013, the City of Aiken conducted a special election to fill the one unexpired at-large seat on council. Former council member Don Wells was elected to the South Carolina House of Representatives in November 2012, thereby creating a vacancy on council. Two candidates qualified for the election, and their names were placed on the ballot. Philip Mary qualified as a Republican ticket, and Randy Gaines qualified on the Democratic ticket. With 1,742 votes cast in the election, the results are as follows. Philip Mary received 1,373 votes. Randy Gaines received 348 votes. We hereby certify the election of Philip Mary to the unexpired at-large seat on Aiken City Council. The term of office will expire November 2013. Respectfully submitted, the Election Commission, Richard Johnson, Chair, Keith Wood, and Matt McLaren.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll have the oath of office.
The Constitution of this state and of the United States. council member of the municipality of Aiken.
Member of the municipality of Aiken.
I will equally, fairly, and impartially. To the best of my ability and skill. Exercise the trust reposed in me. And I will use my best endeavor. To preserve the peace. And carry into effect. According to law. The purposes for which I have been elected.
Congratulations, Philip. Forward to working with you, certainly.
Thank you.
Very happy for you. Would you do one thing before
Absolutely.
We go move on, and that is acknowledge your family members?
Oh, yes, I'd be glad to. Thank you, Mayor. I want to acknowledge I've got my mother here and her sister, Mary Neal, my mother, Jeanette Holly, and my wife, Amy, my little girl, Greer, who's 11, my son, Philip, who's 16, my stepfather, Larry Holly, Lee Neal, my uncle, and a whole slew of other folks who probably I can't name them all right now.
You going to have them stand?
I think we're okay.
I guess one reason they may have come is to make sure you didn't change your mind.
I think they were just hoping I would mess up so they could laugh at me.
Well, thank you all for being here, certainly. Item 3 under presentations is the USC Aiken men's basketball team champions, and we're so pleased to have you here this evening. And I'm going to move down to the other microphone. We do have a proclamation, and if you would, the team and coach, where's Coach Alexander? If the team would come up and line up here, this is for a picture. This is going to be for a picture. But while I'm moving, if you would move up here. And then, Coach, if you would just be over there with me.
Mayor, Randy
just a minute.
Is the athletic director.
Okay, is Randy?
Floyd Jordan is here, too.
Okay, I want to recognize Mr. Warwick and Chancellor
Jordan.
Jordan. Thank you. I didn't see you back there. I do now. Very good.
You want them to come down?
Yeah. I would like for you all to come down, too, to be with the team. Okay?
I'll follow you.
Okay. Okay, we're going to have another picture in a minute if you want to wait. And yeah, I want to be in it. Really, it just goes with the process.
But
I want to just make a couple of comments. I was sitting writing at my desk today, and I thought, you know, what does it take to be a championship team? And this can go for anything we do, really, in our career. But I just wrote down a couple of things, and you can think of many others, I'm sure. First of all, you need an excellent coach and leader, and we've got one right here. You have to have a love for the game, a strong desire, and team, y'all really have. There's no doubt about it. First time in history to go this far. And that's wonderful. You've got to be dedicated to your work, and work hard and long. I know that's the truth, too, right? Just like I have to do. You have to have a can-do attitude and never give up. And a great, and you have to have a great support from your university and your community. And we are so proud of you. And you're going on now to the participate in the Elite Eight for the first time in history for the school. And be in Louisville, and we congratulate you and wish you well as you take that trip. And we look forward to maybe having you back here in a few weeks again. Okay? But you're champions right now.
Coach, we couldn't let you leave with just a proclamation, so it's a special Monday night treat. We have a stress toy, and we have it on good authority that this is actually a pacer. So hopefully it's a good luck charm, or at least it's a stress reliever. And I think we've got one for every member of the team. So
Well, on behalf of our team, we'd like to thank the City Council, Mayor Kavanaugh, and our wonderful Chancellor and my Athletic Director, and just, you know, our families, you know, they sacrifice a lot to allow us to do what we do. We have some wonderful spouses, kids, and, you know, the City of Aiken has just been phenomenal. You know, I've had so many emails and so many texts and so many phone calls. You know, of our community sharing that they're driving to Louisville, and that's just awesome. I myself personally just overwhelmed and blessed to have this opportunity. This is a great group of young men. I'm the most blessed coach in the world. So, and I'm blessed to be here and blessed to be in Aiken, and we just appreciate everything you guys have done, and just thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
Before we go over for the picture, let me read the proclamation before I forget that. Whereas the University of South Carolina in Aiken is an integral part of our Aiken community. Whereas the University of South Carolina Aiken Athletic Department is an integral part of what defines this outstanding, comprehensive academic institution. Whereas the men's basketball team has provided not only great publicity for the university and the community, but it has also provided outstanding entertainment, most recently by making history by winning the Southeastern Conference Regional title, propelling them to the Elite Eight of the Division II NCAA tournament for the first time in the university's 50-year-plus history. Whereas we are representatives of the Aiken community, wish to congratulate this history-making team and wish them even more success as they travel to Kentucky to hopefully advance further up the ladder. Now, therefore, we, the Aiken City Council, do hereby declare March 25th through April 1st as 2013 as Aiken Men's Basketball Team Week in the Aiken community, and urge all us... and urge all of our citizens to support the USCA men's basketball team in their efforts to continue to excel in their sport. Witness our hands and seal of the City of Aiken, 25th day of March 2013. Signed by Council. Okay. And if we could, on a picture, if Council could be in a position where they can be in the picture too.
Want everybody. This is really the moment for the basketball team and for our coach and for our athletic director, but it's shared deeply by the university. I have to tell you that watching the games throughout this year, it seems like through the season, I had the feeling from time to time we were playing teams of thugs. But that was never the case with these young men who make up our basketball team. I could not be prouder of their behavior on and off the court, their level of their scholarship, their commitment to giving back to the community. I am proud of them in so many ways, above and beyond their athletic prowess. Gentlemen, thank you so much for representing us so well.
Adjust. Okay. It's adjustment. It's okay. Just we have to take it apart to do it.
Undo it. Okay.
We need to lay out the standards.
Okay, going now to old business. Item one is appointments and discussion of appointees to the city boards, commissions, and committees. Mr. Pierce, please.
Mayor, thank you very much. We have 14 vacancies on boards. We have four appointments tonight based on the recommendations from our last meeting. The first is Councilmember DeWar recommended Stephen Mueller for the Accommodations Tax Committee, and that is a reappointment. That term would expire March 25, 2015. Councilmember Ebner recommended Tina McCarthy for the Accommodations Tax Committee. This is also a reappointment. That term would expire March 25, 2015. Councilmember Homoki recommended Regina Brackett for reappointment to the Accommodations Tax Committee. That term expires also March 25, 2015. And finally, Sharon Brown was recommended by Councilmember Homoki for the Arts Commission. That new term would expire April 11, 2015. So for council consideration is the approval of these four appointments spread between the Accommodations Committee and Arts Commission.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Passes unanimously.
Did you have any other nominations?
Yeah, how about others? Nominations for next meeting? Anyone have any? If not, we'll move on then. Under new business, the review of the Accommodations Tax Committee recommended disbursements. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Each year, the Accommodations Tax Committee reviews numerous requests for funding from area events that promote tourism by visitors from more than 50 miles from Aiken. They met again this year, and they've had several recommendations. There are actually 17 this year. There were 16 last year. There were $343,520 in requests and $186,171 to distribute. The recommended distribution for the accommodations tax funds are contained in my memo and also in a memo that the chair of the Accommodations Tax Committee, Peggy Penland, who is here tonight. So, Peggy, if you could come down to the microphone in case there's questions from council. So, for council's consideration are the recommended disbursements. After I received the memo from Ms. Penland, we did receive, I think our city clerk received a letter that was penned by Bill Reynolds, who is the interim director of the Aiken Center for the Arts. And that's included in your packet. It was addressed to City Council. So we have provided that to you, and he's raised some concerns and has made some recommendations in there. But what's on the agenda for tonight is approval of the disbursements as recommended by the Accommodations Tax Committee.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Ms. Penland, would you have anything to say at this point? Would you like to...
Mr. Mayor, it was a difficult meeting. We had about half the funds that we needed as far as requests go. The same thing comes up at every meeting, which is the purpose of the funding is to put heads on beds, quote unquote. And of course, there are many requests, some of which do not necessarily bring overnight business, or if they do, the surveys are not there to prove that. We do the very best we can with the funding that we have, and if you can imagine a room full of people that all need money and you got 50 cents on the dollar, that's where we are. So my committee members are cognizant of the situation, the laws, the prerequisite, so to speak, and we wish we could give every applicant what they need, but it's not possible. We can only work with the funding that we have. So if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Well, I'd just like to say that
I don't have a copy of the letter you mentioned.
Okay, well, the memo.
I think Bill has raised some interesting points about, you know, reviewing certain things. I'd like to make that a part of the record, certainly, without saying, you know, things could change. I don't know. It's a tough situation. We all understand that. But I'd just like to ask two questions, if I may. One is about the surveys. Now, what does the state, do they require some type of a survey?
The city or of Aiken, is Lisa here?
Lisa's here and Glenn Parker's here, Mayor.
Okay.
They may be available to answer those questions.
Come up, Lisa.
Oh, okay.
I'm under the impression that the surveys are required, and the members of my committee, I'm just the chair, okay? The members of my committee are more and more concerned about the surveys.
Right, right.
And it's tough. I mean, it's difficult. I'm a hotel owner, and we've been told that our front desk staff needs to be contacted at every event and ask which people were at which events. And that's tough because our front desk person doesn't necessarily know why the people in our hotel are there. They can't ask that many questions, especially when they got a whole hotel full of people, which I wish was more often than it is. But
right.
So my committee members, our committee members, are, like I say, more and more concerned about surveys.
Right. The other question I had, too, is about the heads on beds.
Yes.
And just how, is that a mandatory kind of thing from the state level? As best you can, find that information out. Or is it not that important?
It's definitely important. The state defines a tourist, though, as anyone who visits Aiken from outside a 50-mile radius. They do not necessarily have to stay overnight. But I think the committee does a good job of realizing that this tax is generated via overnight stays when they are looking at these events.
Right. Has that changed over the years, Glenn?
Changed a few years ago. It used to be heads on beds. It literally was.
Yeah.
But it has changed.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well,
so the as far as the advertising that is required to be approved for the funding, it has to be sent to out. It has to be outside a 50-mile radius. Now, whether they spend the night or not, that's obviously the tourist's choice. It really goes back to the definition of a tourist.
Glenn, did I understand too that with the surveys, that typically we would not disperse any funds until the surveys are turned in?
That's correct. Yeah, they may, a group may get awarded X amount of money, and then when they request reimbursement, that's the point in time we ask for their surveys, and they normally turn that in when they do that. So, yes, they have to show us the survey. And the committee's done a more stringent job in recent years of asking for those surveys. At one point in time, we had more money than request. Now, with as Ms. Penland said, we've got about twice the amount of requests that we have money to allocate. So it is very important that we see the results of those surveys.
So to the extent that somebody may have received an award but fails to comply or doesn't apply for the funds, would those funds then become available for distribution?
They would, yeah. Yes.
And what has actually happened is that later in the year, when we really know more about the revenues and the taxes, we have in previous years gone back and funded 100% of the request. But we can't give it all away before it comes in, basically.
Right. The other question I had, I'm sorry, I'll ask it later. Let someone else ask. Make comments or whatever.
I think one, and either Ms. Penland can answer. I noticed from last year it was distributed or set awarded anyway on your chart of $278,000. And this year it's $186,000. That's almost $95,000 less.
Right.
Is that a real number?
Well, let me clarify. When we came before you to approve the list last year, at that time we thought we just had $181,725. So this year it's actually $186,171. And again, that's based on the estimates. We don't know till the end of the year what we actually have. And that was also a change in approach, too, as I understand, Glenn. Used to be you would collect it, then distribute it. Now you have to get an estimate. We use a five-year projection. So based on the five-year projection, that's at $186,000. So just so we know, you know, when they came before you last year was not that total. Okay.
So if, let's say we get a large share of that back in, and it is, how is that prorated among all of the people?
That's a real challenge. There's no formula. There's no formula for it.
Okay.
Mr. Reynolds told us specifically at the meeting that there were deadlines for advertising. I believe it was Garden and Gun magazine. Is that correct, Lisa? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's a $6,300 ad that has to be committed well in advance, and it was for the Antiques in the Heart of Aiken. So based upon what he told us at the meeting, the Antiques, we went ahead and funded more fully because of his time constraint. Like I said earlier, we hope we can come back and
adjust,
replenish the coffer.
Okay, thank you. I have a question on this. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My question deals with reserve funds. Do you keep some reserve funds?
We do. We normally keep a contingency of $5,000.
Okay.
Just that we sort of take off the top to hold in case May or something, a group decides they want to come to town or somebody wants to bring a group to town and they need some money to help them, and we've been able to use that. We also have times where we appropriate 100% of the money, but maybe one group we only spend 90% of the money or something like that, then that goes back into the kitty also to be redistributed.
Okay. Did we not at one time talk about the number of years that we were going to fund a request?
We talked about it. We never
acted on
have acted on that, okay. Correct. We have funded some for several years.
For many years.
I think this year there were three new ones that came on board requesting funds this year.
So is this the actual allotments here, the ones that's recommended? Is this what they will get?
This is what we're recommending. One of the reasons you see this now in March is this money doesn't, they can't spend the money till July 1. It's a 13-14, but we have to anticipate what we'll bring in and then let them know, just as Ms. Pendland said, so they can start placing their ads
mm-hmm.
in magazines for those summer or early fall editions based on the estimates that we know now. We try to get two quarters worth of draws, and that way Lisa and Kim Abney with finance can come up with this number that we use to base the estimate on.
So they won't be any less than these recommended amounts?
There hasn't been in the past. Let me answer it that way. It is an estimate. It's a conservative estimate, too. So, and that's one of the reasons we do conservatively, because if we had $100 to give out, and let me back that up. If we gave out $100 and only 90 came in from the state, then the next year we have to eat that $10 ourselves. We don't go to the different groups on here and take it away from them. Just the pot would be $10 less if we'd had to pay that back to the state.
You would be shorting yourself for future years.
Exactly. Yes,
sir. Glenn, is this calculated, is it 3% of gross receipts of all overnight stays, hotels? Or is that
3%? Well, no, this is state money. This is 2%.
2%.
2%. The city accommodations tax is 3%.
Okay.
That's a different pot of money.
Different ball of wax.
Different pot of money.
You'll see that in your budget.
So this is 2%. So you're probably talking, I can't do the math that fast, $7.5 million in gross receipts?
Something of that nature. Yeah. Like you haven't done the math.
So. Okay. I did it for 3%. I didn't do it for 2%. So I don't know. All right. That's just, that number seems lower than I would have expected it to be in gross.
It's been fairly consistent.
Anything other than hotel receipts?
No.
Just hotels.
No.
Okay.
Correct. Correct. It's hotel receipts.
We do have merchants, shop owners, and restaurateurs, Todd Lister, what do you consider yourself?
Graffeur.
Excuse me, at large. Okay, so it's not just, as a matter of fact, we now have the largest percentage of hotel owners. You know, Sam Earp was here in the, in the past as a chair.
As you're talking about the members of your board?
Yes.
Yeah. But the but the dollars come strictly from hotel receipts,
we
right?
We collect them, we pay them.
Okay.
And again, the estimated receipts a little less than $5,000 higher this year than last.
And we've been pleasantly surprised every year.
Good.
Now, of course, if Citizens Park wants to give up their $10,000, we can give it to the old rentals and everybody will be happy.
I have another question. What, how important is it that the applicant funds provide, they provide funds of their own?
It is important. We look at that, every. And there was a sentence in the letter. We were very cognizant. Where's the mic? Okay. We were cognizant when we went through the list not to fund people before we got to the end of the list. Okay. We run through all of them, then we come back.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hey, just curious, how long did your meeting last?
The meeting started, I had to be there at 3 o'clock. I had to call my husband and ask him to go pick up my son because at 5 o'clock we were still there and we weren't getting out anytime soon. 6:30. So 3 to 6:30. It was not an easy one either. I told the mayor about it later since he appointed me. Oh, my goodness.
Well, I did notice, and I talked to Bill Reynolds about this too, that they didn't show any funds provided, at least on the form I've got. And he said, "Yeah, that." He didn't go into details, but he knew that, and you know, he said that wasn't going to happen again. So that may have hurt him as far as he's concerned.
I don't think that is why it happened. I don't think it's what. We know that they do the best they can, and they're a very, very good organization.
Oh, absolutely.
So and, this is not about organizations.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there's some way, and I don't know the answer to this, that you could apply a certain percent to different things, like so much on heads on beds.
Kind of a weighted scoring
system? A weighted scoring system of some type. You know, this is a subject we've talked about so many times in the last 20 years or so. And so we all realize it's not an easy thing. But
well, a lot of times what happens, Mr. Mayor, is that an event will bring about a lot of tourism and that there are a lot of people eating out, but they may not be staying overnight.
Right.
So, you know, a street festival in downtown Aiken is a wonderful thing. But it doesn't necessarily bring heads on beds. And heads on beds is not 100% of what we do, but it's important.
Yeah.
So if you want me to look further into the laws of it, I'll be happy to.
No, you've explained that very well. I'm just thinking you might look, the committee might look to see how, if it is feasible to weight certain things. It would make it easy. I think it would make it easy on the committee making decisions.
I believe Steve Mueller has come up with a formula. Steve, would you like to speak to this? It looks like we have several committee members here tonight.
Yeah, well, we thank you all.
Can you introduce him, Peggy?
Steve Mueller, Rose Hill.
Is the microphone?
That's down. It's behind the laptop. It's your phone, Steve. We got it.
Good evening. Yeah, as Peggy had said, I had suggested, I had seen, I had looked at what other communities had done at allocating the money, and there was an evaluation form they had used so that everyone had the same criteria and it was weighted. And if this was known, it would make our process more equitable, plus the people who were requesting funds would know specifically what we were looking at.
Absolutely.
So, we briefly talked about this earlier, because there are so many variables when people are requesting money. First of all, we are enthusiastic about any nonprofit bringing in people into town. They're all going to bring them in. but it's hard, one, to estimate, and two, to document how many are actually there. So that's going to fluctuate. And then they're going to vary also on the amount that they're requesting,
yeah.
You know, the money, and then how much we're going to give them. So.
Right. But so, the less, I like the idea very much. The less variables you have in the thing makes it easier, though, if you've got some specific things you can look at. You know, this gets so much percent, this gets so much, and well, you know this, but could you pursue that?
And one other thing you might think about is different organizations have different way to request. For instance, the Chamber of Commerce, Diane is here, they have lowered their request over the years because as Aikens-Macon does better and better, they request less and less.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this business of let's request double what we need, and maybe, you know, that's not a good way to go about it.
And that's what I'm kind of thinking is happening here with when you see 300 and some thousand dollars.
And I think that was years ago one of the reasons, Mayor, that we talked about not funding these projects after a certain period of time, and we didn't do it, hoping that.
But
didn't want the escalation to take place, which is
We have spent a lot of time and energy on trying to fund new, like the African American Museum, if they're in their infancy,
right?
And then once they get on their feet, obviously the Steeplechase and some of these, they're okay. So, but we do have criteria.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. The surveys are primarily the organization calling the hotels to verify how many people have stayed there?
That's what some of my committee members want.
Okay. And could the survey just as well be forms that are filled out when people go to the event?
These organizations do surveys. They already do their surveys. Some do a better job than others.
Well, this is the toughest issue that we have to deal with, I think. Sometimes it's tougher than the budget because we have to respect the 3.5 hours that your folks put in.
Right.
And I'm not comfortable coming up here, and I've said in a couple of years in the past, I'm not interested in overriding anything that you do, but I am impressed with some of the numbers that you have. You have a column for total estimated attendance and total estimated local, and it would seem to me if that number that says total estimated local is high, then we're not talking about an event that's bringing a lot of people from outside,
right.
And that should be a major factor in the award. The other one is total estimated tourists, and again, the higher that number, it would seem the better off, and the total estimated number of rooms rented, and again, the higher the better. Now, some of that data is very difficult to get, I would admit. But, I mean, this is data given by the organizations when they submit the application. I mean, I think as council we owe this committee a philosophy that we think they should abide by, because I certainly am not interested in browbeating them for the job they're doing. It's a very difficult job. But I mean, it would seem to me as though we ought to ask them to put heavy weight on the heads on beds, the people that are coming in from out of town. That's the criteria. That's where the money comes from. And we've got some of these that are, I got four or five of them that are above 80% that are local organizations, and yet some of those are getting more money than organizations that have higher. I mean, the number one is clearly the city of Aiken with the rec fees for the four tournaments. I mean, 90% of the people are tourists, 10% are local. I mean, that's what the program's all about.
Those are the facts.
Yeah, and that's what the program's all about. So I'm certainly not interested in changing any numbers you're giving us, but I think as a body, we should provide this committee with the guidance on what we think is the most important, and then let them go at it, because we're going to have these kinds of discussions every year, and it's just not fair.
And in addition to the normal criteria, sometimes we look at it as to the number of dollars and the number of tourists, and how much are we spending per tourist? That can range from $80 to $200 a head to get a tourist here. And if it's a $90 hotel room, Yeah, there's a lot of things to look at.
Do the math.
Well, would y'all, Peggy, would y'all take a look at this and see the things we talked about and the suggestions that have been made and see if you can't come up with something and through Glenn and Richard, you can give it back to council to look at?
Yes, sir.
And maybe you can come up with a way of putting a certain percentage on different things.
Any suggestions you have is most appreciated.
I think we've given some suggestions in our discussion here a lot.
And we will take them back to the committee.
Is there potential, though, for modeling an objective standard after some other municipality?
Oh, absolutely, if it works. If it's better than what we have.
Is there a way to get that information, how others are doing it?
Well, Glenn.
We could do that.
Yeah, we can do that.
I think Bill Reynolds asked Skipper to make some comments.
Sure. Sure, Skipper.
Skipper. You have to come forward.
You know you've got to come up here.
Hey, you can't get by with that.
He just wanted an invitation.
I don't see it, so I'm assuming it's around here somewhere.
We got you.
The only couple questions I have, just for instance, when we were given the deadline between this date and this date to turn in our request, it never said in the handbook that we go by that the quicker you get it in that week, the more consideration you'll be given. So if you'll look at the first page, bottom paragraph of the letter we sent, first six applications, that's over 60% of what they requested. And the bottom six, which we got in on time, got less than 50% of what they requested. And I just was wondering why that happened. It's a rhetorical question because you're not going to give us any more money. Number two, I think we just need to figure out. Y'all need to figure it out. When I sat here, we couldn't figure it out. I'm standing here, we hadn't figured it out. So
we'll figure it out.
We need to figure it out so we know what to ask for.
I agree. Right.
We do 500 and something surveys. We did 100 and something heads on beds. Every antique store in the city and the surrounding areas and every restaurant loves us because we pack them in. And number two, before you fund somebody and then cut them off after a couple of years, let me talk to one of you, Peggy or somebody. I used to do this for a living after I got out of liquor business. Some you should keep funding, some you should cut off. There's a reason, a rhyming reason, why you do it to some and not to others. And it
exactly.
Absolutely.
I couldn't understand if I got in the business, and that makes logical sense. But anyway, the one request I would ask y'all's indulgence on, we ask for two requests, one for the antiques and the heart of Aiken and one for the general promotion of the Aiken Center for the Arts around the state and connected states. If y'all would let the Department of Recreation split our money up so it's heavily weighted in the antiques and the heart of Aiken side, since we didn't get very much, we got cut pretty severe, could we get our money maybe shifted over so we got more for the antiques? That's a more critical advertising goal because we go out of state pretty heavily, and we need that money.
You mean the Art Center? I'm not sure.
Well,
you've got 20,000.
We get it under two requests. We get it under Antiques in the Heart of Aiken is a line item.
Mm-hmm.
And then general promotion, for the lack of a better word, for the Aiken Center for the Arts, for year-round promotion.
28,000 was the total between those two, so the show got 20,000. And then the general marketing got 8.
So you did get the more
so,
in that category.
You have to change that now.
Right.
All right. Because we can document 25,000 plus people come through those doors every year. And that's pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I always say we're all members.
Right. Skipper, the first thing you mentioned, I think that was addressed earlier by a couple of speakers, about the fact that you don't go by first in, and they get more of the money, but you wait until everything comes in, which is the way it should be, and then you start your evaluation.
I'm just saying, it just happened to be that the first six got the highest money, the last six in got the lowest amount.
Right. And if you go back in years, I don't know if it'd be that way every time or not, but answer, Peggy, answer that again, please, what you said about that, that it doesn't work, or Glenn, whoever said it, but it, you don't take them.
Right.
That's what
we run through each organization. We make no award.
Okay.
And then we come back, and we go one by one, and we give the representative from that organization a chance to speak. I think the difficulty here could be the fact that there are two requests from the Center for the Arts. There's 28 and 28,000. That's 54,000. I'm sorry. 56. You're a better mathematician than I am. So $56,000.
Yeah.
And so after, and Bill Reynolds did a great job at the meeting. He was there. He said, you know what? I feel your pain. I'm going to reduce my request. I mean, he was great. He understood. And once he told us about his deadlines, we altered the way we awarded this because we knew about his deadlines for art for the Antiques in the Heart of Aiken. We really hope to fund the exhibition and art center marketing more fully when the funds come in. It really doesn't have anything to do with the position on the list. Mm-hmm.
That's the way it failed.
Well, his, you know, the thought here in his letter, and also when he called me on the phone, we talked, was that he's not complaining. He thinks maybe it could be made fairer. He's under the impression, perhaps, that maybe the first in get a little bit more, you know, attention than the others if they're late, which you've cleared that up. And the fact that they didn't put any of their own money into it, so to speak, and the others did the match, and you've told us that that does make some difference. I don't know how much difference, and this is the problem. You know, how much difference does it make?
Lateness issue. I can't.
There were no late applications, Mayor. They were all received by the deadline.
Right. I understand.
The decision was made just to list them in the order that they were received. One thing, and she's not here this evening, Ms. Victor made a great point during the meeting. She said, guys, we need to go back, start at the top, and let's look at these and move money, and the committee did. They took some from here and put it here. They moved it around two or three times prior to making their final recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we alphabetized it,
right,
the X's and Z's would be complaining, I guess. So.
Yeah. Well, please don't take anything we've said tonight as critical. Y'all have done a fine job, and it's a tough job, and I'm glad I'm not on that particular committee.
Mr. Mayor, another thing that might be important for the committee to understand is that as far as the Center for the Arts is concerned, there are two requests. One is the Antiques in the Heart of Aiken, which runs a weekend. That's a weekend event, and they have surveys. They've done a great job on these surveys. Okay, so they have the proof that we need. When it's general marketing dollars for the center, that doesn't receive the priority that the event, which is an overnight event, will get. But there again, when the funds come in, we can do better.
But again, that you'll know pretty much through
right.
the first two
in July.
Quarters how you're tracking.
We'll know after about the last third draw.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Now again, I think this was asked already, but if you do get money in back, how do you go about?
The committee gathers back together and looks at what we brought in and how to distribute that.
Those extra funds.
Because maybe some of these organizations don't need any more or don't want any more.
But last year, weren't we able to fully fund all of them?
Last year
they were all fully funded after the fact. It was a surprise.
Good.
And it does, it's not good for some of the groups. Their event has already occurred. Some of the earlier events, it's more difficult on them because they've already spent their marketing for the year for that event.
Right.
So it is a little bit more difficult on those. That's why we try to estimate it as close as we can.
But to the extent that they spent the advertising and have the receipts, they still have a right to come seek reimbursement.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, okay. There's another comment from the team.
Yes. Diane
Phillips.
I am Diane Phillips with the Aiken Chamber of Commerce, and we applied for tax money for Aiken's Macon, as we do every year. These guys do have a hard job, because there's not enough money. And I did sit through that meeting. The hardest part for us, the funding, you have to start spending that money in July. Our event is in September. Last year, when they were fully funded or when they received all that extra revenue, they met the day my event started to determine how they could redistribute those funds. We were done at that point. So if they're going to revamp kind of their process, it would be great if they put these projects in a timeline order maybe on their list, which events happened first, because for us, we had already spent all of our marketing money. Even knowing that they could fully fund us the next day, we had no additional opportunity to use that additional money. Last year, we were fully funded. We were not able to receive that entire amount because we didn't spend it all. So a little bit went back into the fund, but we were able to get more than we anticipated, and I do thank God for them, and thank God I'm not on that committee. Thank you.
Very, very good point. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Does anyone else want to speak on this subject?
I would just want to make one comment. I'd like to see Council take as an action item the comments made by Stephen Mueller and Councilman Meredith. Take a look at how other communities do it to see if we can't come up with a more objective way of doing it. If Skipper's been fighting this thing for as long as he's been involved with Council, it's been way too long. We need to try to get this thing resolved. I mean, it's never going to be perfect, but I think we owe it to the committee. It would seem to me that the heads on beds, the percentages that I talk about, the data is there. But maybe we could take an action item to find out how other communities do it and ask Stephen to give us his ideas on it and come up with a document that we give to the committee next year to kind of make this item a little bit quicker on the agenda.
Yeah. Our city manager said he would do something on this.
Yeah, thank
we'll
you.
Be happy to. We'll be
and
happy
Ben's brother.
And thank you, Peggy, very much.
So much. And thank the committee. An excellent
job. Committee. How many other committee members are here? Could you raise your hand? One? Okay.
Two?
Okay. Well, thank you all for what you do and all the others as well.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah.
Are you ready for a motion?
I sure am. For approval.
Yes. I move that we approve the recommendation set forth by the Accommodations Tax Committee for the $186,171.
Okay, do we have a second?
I second.
Okay.
Or do you want to approve all the projects and the projects outlined and
well,
can we take them all at one time?
No. As recommended. We have done
recommended,
that in the
yes.
past. Unless
right.
there's any
okay.
questions on any particular one. Okay, so we've got a motion.
Yes, sir.
Who seconded it?
I did.
Thank you. Okay, any discussion, further discussion? Anyone? Okay. Show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Item 2 is the first reading of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding measurement of the length of a residential structure. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance amending the zoning ordinance regarding the measurement of the length of a residential structure in the planned residential, planned institutional, and planned commercial zones and associated definitions. You do have a copy of the ordinance contained in your materials along with an exhibit to the ordinance that shows the addition of language, the deletion of language, and then a new definition for building length for Chapter 10. That's also contained in my memo that I've shared with Council as part of the agenda packet. You have Chair Liz Stewart's a memo from the Planning Commission talking about the meetings that they had, the review that they conducted at Council's request. As you see in planned residential, planned institution, and planned commercial provisions, the citations are contained in my memo. they're deleting the 300 feet in length tab for buildings, and it just says city council may limit the length of any building. So there's no number associated with that. It's left up to council for decision. And then as far as Chapter 10 goes, there's a new language for building length to talk about rectangular buildings, buildings composed of two or more interconnected rectangles, and buildings of irregular shapes. And there are attached to the ordinance those three examples in figures 1, 2, and 3. So for council consideration on first reading is this ordinance to modify the definition of residential structure in these zones.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
I so move.
I second.
Okay. We have a second. Discussion?
Yeah, yes, sir. Go ahead. I guess, and I've gone to all but one of the meetings where since the BZA ruling on this, I guess one of the concerns, we define how to measure a building, but we have nothing to compare it by. We take out the length of the building, then we say how to measure it. And it says the city council, she has it up on there, the city council may limit the length of any building. And planning has the authority, whether it's already been designated that zoning, they could make the building, they or the developer could request one 600 feet long, and they could put in a building 600 feet long. And I guess I'm a little concerned about not having at least some kind of guideline in there. And I think the guideline of the 300 feet was put in 99, and then the original was back in the 80s when it had eight consecutive dwellings in a row. I guess I'd like a little explanation maybe from planning or someone that are we causing ourselves a problem here not having something to guide us by?
Mr. Evans is here. Mr. Evans, he can speak to that.
The thinking in removing the 300-foot limit really stems from the Director of Public Safety and, primarily Director of Public Safety, who had no concern about removing that limit. They didn't. Well, it was also the building inspector, in addition to the Director of Public Safety, neither of whom thought it was necessary to have that limit in there and didn't have a problem with removing it.
Is there, in our city, there's not much likelihood that we'll have 1,000-foot of row houses like a lot of cities do, Charleston or some of the other, our sister cities, because then the fire codes get very important. The further you go, the more fireproofing you got to put between buildings. And I guess the village out at Woodside brings to mind, because they have probably the 300 feet, and then they put a little alley, and then they got another 300 feet. And the main thing they do that is for fire code issues. But I was just a little concerned that, how does planning and or how does council after planning makes a ruling decide what is right or wrong here?
Would be an approval of the concept plan, wouldn't it?
Correct, yeah. Correct. And we would ask public safety and the building inspector for comments during the review of those concept plans.
And the concept plan would come to council for approval. So, again, under the proposed language, council has more discretion depending on the entire project.
Right. Let's suppose that, there's enough vacant land downtown that there could be a mall, a building, motel or conference center that could be 400 feet long on a whole block. And so we would have no objections to that, I would assume.
Well, you'd have a decision to make, though.
You'd have to review it.
Yeah. Would it have to be a concept center? Could they just come in if they have the land and say, here's a plan for a 400-foot building?
Well, it's particularly these zones, though. So typically with these plan zones, whether it's residential, industrial, commercial, you have a concept plan that comes to council
for
approval.
So it's mandatory, okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, one last question. Would the density, like in the PR, it's 12 dwellings per acre, would that would still override anybody that came in and wanted to make a long string of these, like a one-story motel, out of style for 20 years, but somebody came in, you could have a you know, a building 400 feet long that would still meet the 12 units per acre. Although that density would come in and be part of the ruling factor.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
May I stay there, please? I have some questions. First, the letter that's in the packet implies that it, at the March 13th regular meeting, and I mentioned this the last council meeting, that this item was discussed. This was really discussed at the work session as opposed to the regular meeting. I went to the regular meeting. It lasted about maybe 2.5 minutes, so I want to reiterate, I don't know why you covered a regular item in a work session. I wish they would have covered it in the meeting, because if somebody were going to the meeting to discover this, they would have missed everything.
This item was really not discussed in that work session on March 13th or March 12th. It was dealt with at the February work session, and the decision was made to put it on the March agenda. But in that work session on March 12th, the vast majority of the discussion was on, and I hate to mention it, on dwelling unit density and definition of kitchen and all that. But there was really no discussion of any depth about this issue at that work session.
Okay. Clear something up for me, because I'm confused. At one point in time, when the Lenity Group came in and they want to build, the objection was made by using a different way of measuring the building length, I mean, covering every bit of the perimeter, and we got into the issue with the definition of a kitchen and so forth. And that was appealed, and it went to the Board of Zoning Appeals, and I guess what I'm asking is a technical question. And the ruling, the ruling from the appeal of the Board of Zoning Appeals decision upheld what the Board of Zoning Appeals did. And it appears, I'm not missing something, that we're overruling that. Can I assume that that's okay for us to be doing, and we're just doing what we think is better, even though we might not have liked what the Board of Zoning Appeals did?
Mr. Speaker, if I may, the history of it is the project came to Ed for an interpretation under the zoning ordinance. Ed made an interpretation, and he interpreted what the allowable length of the building was, and he interpreted the zoning ordinance as to what the a dwelling unit definition was. Those two interpretations that Ed made was appealed by the neighboring property owners to BZA, which the zoning ordinance allows them to do.
Okay.
The zoning ordinance now is being clarified by the Planning Commission so that it takes out Ed's interpretive guesswork to make a ruling as to whether or not something is allowed. That's the purpose of this particular amendment to the zoning ordinance, is to clarify how the length of that building is supposed to be measured.
So the Board of Zoning Appeals can do it one way, and we still have the wherewithal to come back through the Planning Commission to the Council to do it another way.
If you read their order, the Board of Zoning Appeals disagreed with the way Ed interpreted the zoning ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
So this issue could come up again. If another project comes before him with this new definition, Ed will make the interpretation. The public has the right to file that appeal with BZA just like they would in the past. But it is perfectly okay for City Council to decide that there is a ambiguity in your zoning ordinance, and I think that was proven by the fact that Ed made an interpretation and our 7 BZA members decided he was wrong, or at least a majority of them decided he was wrong, and they overruled him. And so, obviously, there is an ambiguity in the zoning ordinance, and so the purpose of this amendment is to clarify that.
Okay. Thank you.
I got one quick question. By taking out the 300 feet, not that I'm greatly in favor of either way, if somebody comes to Aiken and is considering building a structure, the corporate memory, we're not going to be here another 25, 30 years from now. The 300 feet in length will vanish. But will the, it almost leaves a little bit of a vacuum for the people planning concept plans, like, do you think 310 feet or do you think 210 or whatever? They have no idea what the council is going to approve or not. What does the council use as a criteria if it's totally up to us? Tomorrow I could say anything over 12 feet No, you know, I mean, obviously
that's an inherent flaw in the in using PUDs for everything. That's the risk that you create by having planned residential, planned institutional, planned commercial. In other words, there are no rules for a developer to follow. He can't come in and assume that he can do X, Y, or Z because there are no rules. Everything has to come before council and is subject to the whim of council. This really doesn't do anything. All it says is that once upon a time you couldn't go above 300 feet, and now it simply says that that council can approve or deny 3 feet, 300 feet, 3,000 feet. So that part of the change almost doesn't change anything from the perspective of a developer or builder. But you hit the nail on the head. There's nothing that those people can hang their hat on to think we've got the ability to come in on a piece of property and do X, Y, or Z because there are no rules. When everything's planned residential, planned commercial, planned institutional, planned industrial, there are no rules. It's just subject to the whim of council.
Well, you know, that's very true. But, you know, to design a concept plan and talk to architect, talk to developers and so forth is not free.
Oh, I know.
And, you know, some of these companies stand to make an investment initially, and then all of a sudden, just out of the blue, the council might decide, no, we don't want that today. And, you know, all that money's down a drain, so to speak. And, you know, I'm talking in the extreme. I mean, chances are we're not going to do that. But I think doing something like this kind of leaves it open, you know, to the whims of the council. Lord knows. If you get up on the right side of the bed today, you know, you're okay. But if not, you know.
I don't think you're talking in the extreme, and I think you're on the money.
Okay, any other discussion? We've got a motion and a second.
You have one.
Huh?
You have that. You just need to vote.
I'm sorry? What?
You do have a motion and second.
I know. Yeah. We do have a motion and second.
Yes.
If there's no other discussion, all in favor, show of hands. Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3, resolution and first reading of an ordinance to approve an exchange of real estate at Dibble Road near West Cliff Subdivision. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The resolution is in the packet. The title of the ordinance is an ordinance authorizing the City of Aiken to convey real property to David and Nancy Hathaway. We have up on the screen the existing property, and you have an exhibit. It's a little bit hard to read in your agenda packet. Suffice it to say, we had an easement across the property that Hathaway's purchased from Ms. Ligon several years ago. Inadvertently, they built a barn over a portion of the easement that makes it very difficult for us, if not impossible, to try and use the easement to go through the property. Fortunately, the Hathaways did construct a road back behind the barn. We can use this road that they built at their own expense, and there's a proposed exchange of property. We would convey to them the portion of the property that includes that barn. It's 0.37 acres. In turn, they're willing to convey to us 1.11 acres. Larry Morris, who's our Director of Engineering and Utilities, worked with the Hathaways over several months' time, since they're not a year-round resident of Aiken, and developed this compromise that we feel would be very useful. So the resolution is to accept from them the 1.11 acres, and then the ordinance covers our conveyance of the 0.37 acres. It would help us, as far as the procedure goes, to go ahead and approve the resolution tonight and then proceed to second reading. And again, this is just to preserve access to the Peggy's Pond and former sewer treatment facility that we had off of Dibble Road. So for council approval tonight is the resolution to accept the 1.11 acres from the Hathaways and first reading of an ordinance for us to in turn convey the 0.37 acres to them.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
I shall move.
I'll second. Okay. Dick seconded it. Any discussion?
Just one question. Do we need a lease agreement, or is that the wording in there? Says the mayor and the city clerk and attorney are allowed to make these agreements, wouldn't that be one of them to have a permanent lease agreement with?
You'd have an easement.
Easement.
The easement would be included in the deed once that deed is finalized.
Unless it's filed, so yes, the easement would be a permanent easement then?
Right. Yes, sir. It would be an express permanent easement. We would record the deed from the highways that gives us that easement right as part of the conveyance language. And this plat that's up on the screen would also be recorded, and that would protect both parties.
Both parties, okay. So we don't need a separate piece of paper for council to approve. Very good.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Pass this. Philip, did you vote on this one? I didn't see your hand. Thank you. My eyes, I guess. Okay. Item 4, approval of the contract for Green Infrastructure Future Phases testing by Clemson University. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And Mr. Morse is going to make his way to the microphone because he's reviewed this agreement. Council will recall that we had an agreement with Clemson University with the Green Infrastructure Pilot Project that we did at the downtown area on Park Avenue, on Newberry, Chesterfield, York, and Fairfield Streets. What we have done with completing the first phase of the Green Infrastructure Project, the item in the capital project sales tax is Hitchcock Woods work to treat erosion. The stormwater Green Infrastructure Project was to treat the stormwater at the source so that we would hopefully send less and less stormwater down through the drain systems that the city have, so that the scouring of Hitchcock Woods could be lessened. This particular proposal from Clemson is to study our existing storm drain system to help determine its impact on the Hitchcock Woods. You've had previous presentations from Dr. Eidson with Clemson University and the Institute there. And his thought was, as he shared it on prior occasions, is treating the stormwater as a source would greatly reduce the amount of money that would need to be spent on remediation of Hitchcock Woods. That money's still going to be spent because the citizens have voted on that. That was in the second penny. The revenues will end up, I think, sometime next month from that. And this fall, we begin the third penny coming in with those itemized items. So, again, this would be an opportunity for Clemson University to study it. The itemization of the costs are on page 88 of your agenda. The total proposals for $367,437. That would provide much-needed data that we could then take to the interested party and stakeholders in this project and then determine the next phases that would be appropriate based on the data collected. Larry, would you add to that, please?
I'd be glad to, Mr. Pierce. Thank you. If you look at page 89 on the proposal, that is a map that I sat down with Dr. Eidson and Cal Sawyer and actually prepared areas that would need to be looked at, which if we quantified the flow from, these areas all do go into Sand River. Now, Clemson did a very nice job for us out on Park Avenue for the green infrastructure that we've put in. It is working. It is working very well, especially with all the rain that we had during February. That system handled it without any problems. So we're very pleased with what they did. What we hope to achieve out of this study by using these areas that you see on page 89 is to actually quantify additional flow that we could go in and put green infrastructure in these areas and further reduce the flow into Sand River. Dr. Eidson feels very strongly, and I believe he's correct, that if we can stop the flow from ever getting to Sand River as we're doing out front on Park Avenue, that we're going to get more bang for our buck. So that's what this is all about. Some very revolutionary ways that they're going to be looking at the flow, which will include actual in-stream flow monitors that they'll put into a storm manhole, and then when a storm event happens, those will actually be washed through the system, and they'll be able to radio track them so that they'll know not only the quantity of flow, they'll know exactly where they're going, how the key manholes that you see on page 89 actually work. It's going to be a good project. It's going to be one that's going to give us a lot of information that'll tell us where to go next and actually get a good result for our funding. Again, we're very pleased with what will happen downtown on Park Avenue. The new parking area that we designed and installed behind the administrative and finance building at 135 Lawrence has been working well. We've taken an area there that did have every drop of water that fell on it ran off. Now none of it runs off. So, again, we are looking to use this to cut down on our flow into Sand River.
Larry, I have a question. Bear with me. As you know, I'm not a technical person. My impression is that what we've done so far has taken care of about 5% of the inflow into the main area of the woods.
I don't know that I can put a percentage on that. When Dr. Sawyer and I were talking about that, the actual measured flow difference that they see is 2% overall. But they didn't feel that they could claim that 2% overall, although that the flow was shown being that, because that's within, as Dr. Sawyer would say, margin of error on any scientific data that's presented.
Okay. If I can, I think the official number, and what Larry is saying is right, is in the margin of error. The number that's in that 112-page report is 0.4% of the estimated total watershed.
Estimated total, yes, sir.
Yeah, and that's one of the, and I'm interrupting for a reason, because these numbers, you have to be careful with them, because when you start dealing with the government and you overproject stuff, you're going to have some problems later on. So excuse me for
interrupting. Well, I just raised the numbers only to get to the main point that I want to make is, on a bigger picture, what actually are we doing? We're going to measure the other, in this case, 98, 99%. We're going to take that 98% that goes in, and we're going to track it all the way through the woods. And then if that's what we're going to do, and that seems to be what we're going to do, what benefit does that give us?
Well, we're not actually going to track it through the woods. We're going to track it to where our discharge goes into the woods. We certainly can't control the water that is falling in Hitchcock Woods and does make its way to Sand River. That's beyond the scope of anything we can do. What we can do is quantify the water that is going down there, and then by knowing exactly how much, as Councilman Ebner says, by knowing how much, then we'll know what type of green infrastructure that we can use. Do we look at more porous pavement? Do we look at using additional rain gardens in some more of our parkways into these areas? So that we get a better handle on quantity.
But the focus is still on external stormwater coming into the woods.
That is correct. Our stormwater downtown and in our developed area that does go into the woods.
And if it rains in the woods heavily, does any of that water get into our stormwater system?
If it's raining in Hitchcock Woods, no.
No.
That water goes directly into the system that is already in Hitchcock Woods, anywhere from going into Calico Branch to Sand River itself.
And does the water essentially, when it goes in to the woods from downtown, let's say, does it eventually wind itself through the woods and come out on the other side?
Yes, sir, it does. The water that we discharge from our downtown core, which is what this addresses, actually discharges to the headwaters of Sand River.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And that ends up, that water ends up actually going into the area down there adjacent to the property that council just looked at and goes under the bridge on Dibble Road.
Okay. And is the woods, is the foundation aware of what we're doing?
Yes, sir. The foundation is aware. And
they're actually members of the board that are here in the audience today.
The board with us. Okay. And again, what we're trying to do is control our water at the source. If we can control it at the source, as we have done on Park Avenue, then we can certainly really reduce the problems that we see in Sand River.
From a technical perspective, you can visualize actions that would control that other 99%?
I don't know what percent that we'll get, Councilman DeWar, because I don't know how much water's out there. As Councilman Ebner says, we have an estimated amount of water based on theoretical calculations. This will actually give us physical measurement of storm events and the water that's going in, and that will tell us how much we can capture.
But the assumption is whatever water is going in, that's what's caused the ecological problem with Sand River.
The water coming from the downtown area is what we've seen that over the years has caused the problem in, as we call it, the Sand River Canyon.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and the point about this proposal is this is data collection. You know, we have money, and we could go out and just build a bunch of green infrastructure. But you've got 167 parkways in the city of Aiken. All of those collect water. And the point is you want to put the infrastructure placement where it has the best opportunity to abate that runoff into the woods so we spend the money wisely for the future phases. While we have some money on hand, we have more money coming in the third round of 1 cent capital project sales tax revenues. And the whole thought was, with the good working relationship we had with Clemson in this pilot project, as far as determining the best location for the next phases, this data collection helps with that
decision. Is correct. It gives us hard information to design to, so that when we put a series of porous pavement areas or when we put a rain garden in the middle of a parkway, we will know how much water that we are trying to collect, and we can design it accordingly.
Yeah, and the conversations that we've had with the professors from Clemson is that while the pilot project was a good opportunity to try a lot of different technologies, there's not necessarily the need to have that much of an installation in some of the parkways, like on Colleton Avenue and other areas. You don't need to put a bunch of curb and gutter in and pervious pavement in because there's not parking spaces there. There's residents that park there, but not like commercial or office buildings. So there's a way to take that existing parkway and just utilize it without a big visual impact to it. And again, the data collection helps as far as what installation you put in what location in the city to help abate that runoff.
Correct.
One question, Larry. Are there any physical changes you foresee or any improvements, any modifications, any installations that actually go into Hitchcock Woods as a consequence of the results of this study, should it turn out that way?
What we're hoping for, I can't answer your question directly, Councilman Homoki, but what we're hoping for is that we can reduce enough water going down there that we can actually reduce what we do need to do there. As you know, the previous solution, if you will call it that, was to pipe the water all the way from the south boundary area all the way through and get it down into the pond area below the showgrounds to the tune of several millions of dollars. By reducing that flow, we could certainly reduce the size of that pipe or maybe even go to a different solution that would be more acceptable to the foundation and cause less problem to the woods. That's what we're shooting for.
Well, you say reduce the size of the pipe. That means you, regardless of what we do, there's going to have to be a pipe that runs the water from south boundary past the show area?
I don't know that I could make the statement that we would ever get rid of the pipe totally. But I know that anything we can do to reduce the water before it gets down into our system of pipes that discharges the south boundary will lessen the size of anything we have to do.
Now, if you do install a pipe, regardless of size, will Sand River still at times be a river, or will it just be a sandy stretch after that? Or
it would still have to have water in it to maintain the ecological character of the woods. The water that falls in the woods would still make its way to Sand River. You still would have the water, the riparian nature of the Sand River, especially in the lower reaches.
So the pipe would be for the city-generated water for that?
That is correct. We would not try to size the pipe to actually take the water from the rest of the woods, but would make it such that the water from the rest of the woods would actually flow on top of the pipe itself so that you really wouldn't know it was there. That would be our goal. And, of course, the smaller we can make the pipe, the less impact that we'll have on the woods when that project actually does come to fruition.
And actually, at this juncture, that's really kind of conjecture.
It's
that's
conjecture.
Why you need the data.
Yeah. And this is in summary, this is measuring the problem
right,
so we can try to come up with a solution to the problem. and then we can answer all these questions.
That is correct.
Question deals with funds. The first round cost us with Park Avenue and others. What did that cost us?
It was about $3 million all done, all told, but a vast majority of that was covered by the EPA grant that was administered through DHEC. That grant was, what, $3.3 million?
3.2, 3.3, somewhere around
in that neighborhood.
And the infrastructure, based on the study that's being done, what do we expect that will cost? That will come out of the one-cent sales tax,
You've got one-cent sales tax money for that.
But we have no idea what that would cost us.
No, because we don't have the data yet to know what the installation would be. Of course, we would keep council informed of that because we anticipate after the study having the data and recommendations of how to go forward. And councils reserve the right to determine the order of the projects. So based on that, depending on the investment that would be involved, we would come back.
We spent all the $3.5 million.
I'm sorry, from the grant money?
Yes.
The grant money has been spent.
This essentially is the first penny sales tax money we're spending on Hitchcock Woods, is it not?
No. I don't think that's correct.
It was $3.5 million, and we're down to 2.3 now, so we did some other work.
The $3.3 million was a grant.
Yeah, but in the capital project 2, was not the total amount $3.5 million?
I didn't bring that with me. I didn't know we had a question about that. Yeah. I'd have to check.
We spent a little bit, but it's not that much.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, we haven't spent much.
$100,000, not millions.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I didn't mean to
say it down. Get in some other technical questions. And today I talked, and I had talked with Mr. Raybould and Dr. Eisen. Last year, I've got more detailed information. One of my concerns is, and right now we don't have any kind of consent order or anything with DHEC to do anything, right?
We do not have a consent order, and we do not want a consent order.
Well, I guess when I read the first, on page 81, when I read the first paragraph there, and we start talking about the tributaries of the Horse Creek watershed, if we tick somebody off downstream of Hitchcock Woods, they could very easily come back and say, we're ruining their pasture land down there. And my experience is at Savannah River, we got all kinds of help from Savannah and all the towns along that. And I'm just, I think we need to be cautious of what words we use when we describe what we're doing. We're dealing with our problem in the city, right?
We're dealing with our problem in the city, and this is a data gathering stage so that we're not committing to any type of design at this point in time.
But I don't think we should commit anything downstream of Horse Creek's watershed either. We should let that flow on through the county. So I think as we go forward, we need to look at how we use our words.
Certainly any project that we did through there, we would be coordinating through not only DHEC but through the foundation.
I understand, but I'm talking about downstream of Hitchcock. When we say conduct testing of our tributaries to the Horse Creek watershed, which includes Sand River and a historic Hitchcock Woods, that tends to bring you all the way down to the river.
We will be required to do that through our NPDES permit that will be issued later this year. The rules have changed on that, and now the secondary cities, which is what we are, a secondary MS4, are being required to do testing, which prior to this permit, we have not been required to test. The Horse Creek has been placed on what's called a TMDL, which is a total maximum daily load allowance for fecal coliform. And since Sand River goes into that, we will be required to test Sand River. Okay. And that it will be in our permit. It's not a consent order, but it's a part of our permit that will be issued.
I think our words need to be chosen very carefully as we do this. The other thing, now, when Wolford did the watershed study, did they include all of the water in total going into Hitchcock Woods, in other words, from the geodetic high elevations within the county, or did they only include city water?
The study that Wolpert did was a master plan study, which did include all of the areas that discharged to the woods, Sand River being just one of those discharge areas.
There's nine of them.
They did include all of that, and that study is about 2 inches thick, if I remember right. It's a fairly comprehensive study.
But it did go to the high ground, like a continental divide, to where the water would run each way when they did their calculations?
That is correct.
Okay. The other thing, and I gave Mr. Biedenbaugh two charts. Could you show the one, the picture there?
Take one. Pass.
What I want to be sure we're doing is, and by the way, I'm all for doing this. All I'm being sure is that we follow our track record, what we've already established. And
Mr. Biedenbaugh made copies, so we pass that out.
Well, I still would like to put it up on the screen.
Oh, no. I'll just say the council has a copy to refer to.
Okay. The Hitchcock Foundation and the Clemson University, and I'll use those in the city, have done a lot of homework. If you'll notice down in the, I made a copy of this out of the information that Dr. Eisen put together, and Hitchcock Woods uses their presentation. The UR here is about where we're sitting tonight. And if you look at the lower left corner where there's some red writing and black writing, it says there downtown, south boundary, and Bibble Road. And I think what's important as this study is done, shouldn't we refer back to what we've already designated? And I'm looking to Larry on this. And when I talked to Dr. Eisen today, I asked him, are we going to define three of the areas that we already have?
The area that we are concerned with under the information that Dr. Eisen has prepared for us is in the Sand River Headwaters section. And that is, I can refer that to you, on the map on page 89 of your...
It is. This is just easier to read.
This is much easier to read, but that is where those areas are.
That's
so we're concentrating on those areas. We're not concentrating, like on the Clark Road, Palmetto, Coker Springs. We're not concentrating on any of those other areas.
But on that, on your plan, you do have a monitor station going in on the Coker Springs exit.
The monitoring stations, I know there's one there, and we're looking. I don't think that we're going to be doing it right now, but there's a possibility of even coming farther down Sand River and putting a monitoring station somewhere down there, especially where we get toward the Dibble Road exit of the woods, and looking to see what we can do there. Again, with our new stormwater permit that we'll have, we're going to have to monitor and we're going to have to sample. So it would behoove us to be able to do that and tie it in with Dr. Eisen's work.
So are we doing the south boundary quadrant that was, you know, it's the other half of the railroad cut is what that is. Is that part of this when they say downtown? The other side of the railroad is, I can't remember if that's part of downtown or
that's
not.
That's Highland Park, if you look at it when you say.
I'm talking about the south boundary, which is the opposite side of the railroad track.
South boundary is included.
Right
here.
So we're going to be doing the downtown and the south boundary, basically what was outlined before.
That is correct, because that is the area that does discharge into the large pipe that discharges there into the headwaters of Sand River.
The other thing, if you look at, and I'm going to just roll some numbers out, as we do this study, some point in time, somebody's going to have to do some protracting or extraction of numbers. If you take 4% of the water, 0.4% of the water, and we spent $3.5 million, that $16 million 10-foot diameter pipe gets pretty cheap. And who is going to be responsible for taking numbers and escalating them up to project level and comparing these? Is that part of this study, or who is going to do that?
That's not really a part of this study. That will be once we get this data and we know what we can do and what type of design work needs to be done, it'll be up to our engineers then to actually take the information Clemson provides and do the design work and actually work up estimates for us.
All right, you know where I'm headed with this. If you spent $3.5 million for 0.4%. That's 250 times that to get rid of all the water. Of course, you wouldn't do all the water anyway.
But those expenditures include the pour, the pervious pavement, several other installations that we would not necessarily have to do throughout the city.
Correct.
Oh, but the numbers get awful big. They get up in the hundreds of millions to do this kind of thing, and I think. That's why I'm clarifying in my own brain. If you would show my next chart up there, and these are Reggie's ideas, and they probably may not float. But talking with Dr. Eisen today, as well as when I met with him last year, obviously the city is greatly involved because it is capital project sales tax money, which is taxpayers' money. And Larry's just defined for me, we're going to do two of the identified watersheds. We're not going to do Coker Springs, right, Larry?
We're working with the Sand River Headwaters watershed, which does include the south boundary and the area over toward Beaufort.
Okay.
That's the area we're working with.
But not Coker Springs, because it's a little offshoot by itself.
Coker Springs is basically an offshoot by itself. We're not getting the problem out of there that we're getting out of the downtown section.
Okay. And item three, I think you've answered, we're going with a geodetic high elevation, which would be the divide where the water would either go to the Eddystone River or down to the Savannah, right?
That's correct. Or it could go into a different watershed that does go to Hitchcock Woods. We're not concerning ourselves with anything except the downtown Sand River headwaters.
Okay. The next one, there's a lot of water that just dumps onto the railroad track bed. And is there some way to monitor that water as it flows down the railroad bed and into the Sand River?
That is part of what the flow monitoring is going to be doing. When I was talking about the small units they're going to use, they're actually going to put them into the piping. And when a stormwater event comes along, it will cause those to float up and flow down the pipe itself. So that will be monitored, yes.
So the water that actually collects down the railroad track will get monitored wherever it dumps into the woods?
That is correct.
Because that's a pretty healthy stream that runs down that also.
Well, and again, if you recall the map on page 89 where we had key manholes that we were monitoring for the storm system, we'll know what's coming in there, and by adding those up and taking the time of concentration, we'll know exactly what's coming to the railroad bed also.
We actually had an opportunity last week to ride the railroad line in the high rail trucks with the current lessee of the railroad from Norfolk Southern. It's not CSX, it's Norfolk Southern Railroad, and he has some various, you know, legitimate and serious concerns about the integrity of the track because he's putting an investment in, has already spent about $250,000 on it. So we have that conversation ongoing.
Okay, because there's a lot of water that goes there that probably needs to be kept. On my number five item, we're going to, is the radio frequency identification, is that going to go down all of the lines in these two watersheds and try to get your drawings brought up to date, some of them 100 years old or so?
When I was talking with Dr. Eidson, I'm not sure we can do all of the lines. These are fairly expensive monitors that they're going to be using. They will have to capture them at the end of the line to be able to reuse them. So obviously this is a very high-risk, if you will, piece of equipment in a sense that as the stormwater is flowing, if it catches up somewhere on a limb or if it hits a stone or something, it could crack it and break it. So I don't want to say we're going to do all the lines. We are going to do the major lines that we have, and that, you know, that's the 48s, the 36s, the lines like that.
The other thing, it really, not my item six, it never really called this basic data. And I guess in my vernacular, that would be called basic data when you collect all of this rather than just study data.
Well, again, that's just verbiage. What we're doing is collecting data for design.
Okay. I guess the reason I put these together, when I read the contract, it was pretty broad in what it said. It said like downtown, it said in the downtown area and those items. And I guess I'm a little concerned that we're going to get a full-blown study of the two designated areas. And I don't know if we need to clarify anything in the contract or not to get that, or if you think there's a good enough verbal understanding to do that.
That's why I put the map in.
Yeah, that's on page 89, so that, right. that figure yeah. 1 will become part of the contract.
That's correct.
Okay, and now page that page also shows Coker, the Coker Creek, the Coker Spring measurement on there. If you would put up page 89, please. Richard, I'm not questioning what we're doing. I want to be sure we get everything we need this time so we don't have to do this a third time. On page 89... you do have the monitor on the Coker Springs
that is correct.
Effluent.
That is correct, but we are not currently planning on doing any design work or green infrastructure there, okay. But we want to know what Coker Springs is bringing in to us. As you can see on page 89, Coker Springs is a very small area compared to the other areas that we have, and that would be this area right here is the Coker Springs area. Compared to this other area here, Coker Springs is very small, but we do want to know how much it is. Again, we're not planning on projects there as such, but we do need to know what the water is doing because that does come in. Coker Springs comes in down roughly at the showgrounds is where its water comes in. So we need to know that amount. So that when we do put a monitoring station down there, if we do, then we'll know what we have to split out from it.
Okay. In your opening presentation, you mentioned that some of these monitoring stations would be used as part of our new permitted monitoring that we have to do, so they would become a permanent station, so to speak?
That's correct. What we're looking at right now, we're working with Browning Caldwell, Mr. Hal Clarkson, to update our stormwater pollution prevention plan. Again, this is part of our new permit that has to be issued to us this year. It should have been issued in 2011 through a lot of DHEC work. They still have not issued permits, so that what we're looking at now is trying to meet what they're saying they're going to issue, and that does include redoing our mapping, which this study will help us do, and it also includes monitoring stations and includes chemical analyses on Sand River because Horse Creek does have the TMDL for fecal coliform.
All right. So our secondary part of it is so the taxpayers can get some secondary use out of the monitoring, and it mentions in here they're going to do soil samples and tests and so forth.
We're going to get a lot of bang for our buck on this because it's not just for the design of detention or green infrastructure or anything. It's going to help us remap our system, which, again, is required by DHEC.
Okay, and probably, you know, I think that's an important point for the council to consider, that all of this is just not going only for the watershed study, but there's some permanent investment involved here. And all of these monitors, I'm talking to Dr. Eisman, they are a portable-type installation. You can move them from place to place.
That is correct.
You just readjust them. So I'm all for the study, but I wanted to be sure we clarified and then feel that we're getting everything that we need, both for the permit as well as our future planning. So it sounds like we have that. So with that, thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Okay, any other comments, discussion?
Yes, sir.
With due respect, I'm here to oppose, due respect to Reggie, I'm here to voice my opposition to this proposal.
Jim, just give your name.
My name is Jim Kelly. Why am I interested in this project? I'm interested in it because I am a homeowner on the northwest side of Hounds Lake North. It's right at the corner of where Hounds Lake North intersects with the Hitchcock Woods and with Fox Chase. I'm a very great lover of Hitchcock Woods, and I'm very interested in the project. Why do I think I'm qualified to speak on this project? I have 32 years of experience with DuPont. Most of that is in research and development management, technology implementation, capital project management, and manufacturing. And since retirement, I've been an independent consultant mainly on the work at the Savannah River site and at the Hanford site. And as an example of some of the work we did at the Hanford site, because it does apply to this in the learnings. In late 2006, I was commissioned as part of a team by the Secretary of Energy to review the $12 billion waste treatment plant, which was under construction at the Hanford site. Secretary Bodman wanted to make sure that the technology was okay for that project before he went back to Congress and asked for more money. After 6 months, our team reported that the project was not a viable project because major parts of the process would not work. As you could expect, our report was not well received. But late 2012, most of that project was shut down by the government because it was deemed that the process would not work. So what I'm trying to tell you is bad news is not always wrong. I have three major concerns with this proposal. First, you're asking to spend $367,000 of our taxpayer money to fund a research and development project from Clemson. Let's be clear that I'm not anti-Clemson, because I am a Clemson graduate, so that has no part in my views on this project. If the city is really interested in helping to solve the Hitchcock-Wood stormwater problem, in my opinion, a request for proposal should be submitted for this $367,000 work, rather than asking Clemson to submit a proposal. This is a lot of money to be just handed out based upon somebody's opinion. Second, I seriously question the wisdom of the approach being taken on the Hitchcock-Wood stormwater problem. In Clemson's 2009 Sand River Remediation Alternatives document, they selected as a preferred option an option that was horrifying to me. Their preferred option was to build a 7,500-foot long, 10-foot diameter pipe within Hitchcock Woods. Can you imagine how many decades it would take for the woods to recover from such a construction project? One of the basic principles in solving a technical problem, and this stormwater problem is a technical problem, is first to understand what the problem is. I personally don't think anybody understands or has a clear definition of what the problem is. How can you solve a problem if you don't understand what it is? In Clemson's 2009 assessment report, they clearly state that even if the total 105 acres of green space within the city was all converted to this green infrastructure, which I call seepage basins in the green spaces, even if all 105 acres was converted to green infrastructure type mechanisms, it would not affect the diameter of the pipe that was going in to Hitchcock Woods. I don't know whether Mr. Morris has different information than I have, but I searched Clemson's documents this afternoon, and that conclusion, as far as I can tell, still stands. So they knew that when they spent the $3.3 million, and yes, that $3.3 million was our taxpayer money because it was federal money, they still spent the $3.3 million on the green infrastructure, even though they knew it would not affect the size of the pipeline that was going to eventually have to be installed into Hitchcock Woods. I suggest that instead of the city spending $367,000 on this research proposal, I suggest that they hire another engineering company who does not have a vested interest in the outcome of the study to provide a different view of what a solution might be. it probably will be a less horrifying view, horrifying solution, than a 10-foot diameter, 7,500-foot-long pipe installed in Hitchcock Woods. I would bet that they would come up with something that has, that's cheaper than the $16 million that's forecast for this to cost, and I would bet that it would have significantly less environmental damage than a 10-foot diameter, 7,500 pipe installed in the woods. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Larry, do you have any knowledge of that report by Clemson?
I would have to go back and review that report. I know in the original documentation, and as we have discussed here tonight, Clemson was certainly looking at what we could do to reduce the water going down there. I would have to state that the more we can reduce, then, you know, the pipe would be able to be reduced just due to what we're taking out of it. I know that whenever I design a water line, that what I'm looking at is not only the amount of people, but the fire flow I need. If I have fewer people, then I have less fire flow, then my pipe size for the water line is smaller. I don't need as much water through it. So conversely, if I'm removing water before it can ever get to the pipe, then I should be able to realize some savings on the pipe. As Mr. Kelly said, you know, as he was saying, to go ahead and have another engineer without a vested interest look at it. We have had many, many studies over the years of Hitchcock Woods by different engineers coming at it from every angle that we can. We've looked at forming lakes in the woods. We've looked at trying to do something with some type of channelization. We looked one time of being able to try to pipe part of the water around, starting from behind what is now Christ Central, taking some of that water and taking it down the railroad tracks and taking it to the swamp area that is down there just west of Dibble Road. We've looked at many, many, many alternatives. One of Clemson's charges when they first started working with us was to assimilate all of those reports and then have public meetings, which we had several public meetings to talk about those reports, to talk about impacts to the woods and what could be done. So there's been a tremendous amount of public input. There's been a tremendous amount of engineering thought put into this. And what we have come up with, what Clemson has come up with, is the fact that if the more we can stop water before it gets to the woods, the better off we are. And I would say I'd have to agree with that. And I understand Mr. Kelly's position, and I respect him for that position, but I would have to respectfully disagree with him.
But is it true that total remediation of all 105 acres would still not affect the size of the pipe we'd need?
Until we can get some data collection, Councilman Dwar, we really don't know how much.
I thought he said that was in that 2009 study.
Right, but they were going then, again, off of empirical data. Clemson was going off of empirical data. You know, that occurred before we even got our green infrastructure in. One of the gentlemen that has seen the results down in the woods, besides myself, has seen the results of a 2-inch rain not really having an impact on Sand River compared to what's coming off of Coker Springs. That a couple of days after the rain had ended, Coker Springs still had some water running and Sand River was dry. That's an impact. And that's certainly something that we want to try to achieve. So by being able to collect the data, by being able to see what we do have out there, I think we've got a much better shot at doing something that's going to be meaningful.
If we check with the people like the...
Just a minute, Jim. Go ahead, Steve.
The foundation, or you know, are the people that quote unquote run Hitchcock Woods amenable to having a pipe run through there? I mean,
it's underground, of course. The pipe's underground, of course.
Well, yeah, it would be, yeah. But I mean, the I think the construction of something of that scale has to affect, you know, the track of the, I assume the pipe's going to follow the Sand River.
It would follow the Sand River.
To the bridge and to the Peggy's Pond or whatever we call it down there.
Foundation personnel were involved in the public meetings and have seen all of the information that was provided. Now, they are here tonight. I certainly don't want to speak for them and put words in their mouth, but they were aware and, you know, they were wanting us to be able to mitigate the damage in, let me call it, the Sand River Canyon, and that seemed to be the best possibility for everyone involved, again, before the green infrastructure was put into place.
Yeah, and as I understand it, Mr. Kelly's had some conversation with Professor Eitz, and I'm not sure if those two see eye to eye about the approach that's being done. It's certainly true, Mayor, you recall we had the big meeting downstairs in the conference center, and the $16 million figure was discussed. Is that was the potential bill that we're facing. But I think Professor Eisen has been very clear, and the professors who are working with him, that with the green infrastructure installation, that cost is significantly reduced. I mean, they are on record saying that. So, I mean, we can pull that all out, and we could certainly have, you know, Professor Eisen come in and speak for Professor Eisen. But,
you know, that may be so, but, I mean, here we are. We say we've reduced the flow by 0.4% due to all the modifications.
Be careful. That's not the number.
Whatever percentage we've reduced it by, why do we need another study? I mean, if the ultimate is we're going to be putting a pipe down the Sand River, why don't we concentrate and try to figure out how to do that and then just forget about the trying to, you know, minimize water flow in the city. I mean, the city's not going to wash away.
But what you have is a situation that we've been in discussions and studying for probably 4 or 5 decades now. And this installation was something that had a measurable impact. I think it absolutely surprised the Clemson team just how effective having the pervious pavement for the parking spaces was. And
do
again,
we have a percentage of the abatement? Or?
I mean, we can get that for you, yes. The point is, what we're trying to do, that was all a pilot project. There was federal grant money to do that. There were lessons learned from that. There was some good information gained from that. But what we're looking at are the next phases for controlling erosion into Hitchcock Woods. The stormwater runoff is what is scouring the woods. And, you know, that's what has been presented publicly, that we were going to come and study the next areas where work needed to be done. This is just data gathering to then come back and talk about specifics. So it's just premature to talk about pipe and pipe lengths tonight. We really need this data to then see what the ultimate goal would be. Without the measurement, we don't know the measures to take.
Well, what are the options? A 10-foot pipe, an 8-foot pipe, a 6-foot pipe?
And again, Councilman Homoki, we really don't know without knowing how much water we can take out. The 2009 information that was Mr. Kelly was referencing, if you look at when our green infrastructure project started, we didn't have it out there then. The green infrastructure project was not complete. We did not have any information saying we're actually cutting this water flow off. You know, this is working. So what you're looking at, you're almost comparing the apples and oranges in a sense that once the green infrastructure was in, we saw how well it worked. We handled over 9 inches of rain downtown in February. We did not have a breakthrough. We didn't have water standing on the porous pavement whatsoever. Whereas before we had the porous pavement, all of that water would have gone straight down to Hitchcock Woods. And that's 9 inches of rain in our downtown area where our green infrastructure is. Now, admittedly, it's only on our 5 blocks of Park Avenue, but we handled that water.
What's the mitigation at the entrance to the woods by doing this infrastructure?
What we hope to see at the entrance.
What have we seen from what we've done?
Well, and I can't answer that. I haven't been down to the woods in several months. But what we're looking to see is to stop the erosion that's happening there in the canyon area and keep that sand from moving on down into the showgrounds and on down, actually moving through woods all the way down beyond Dibble Road.
But the study that you were talking about doing, and I'm still thoroughly confused, we don't have a big picture of what it's going to take to fix Hitchcock Woods, but that set aside for a moment, what we're doing with this contract, if we let it out, is we're going to get more data, as I understand it, on water that's flowing into the woods.
Correct.
We know that.
Okay,
From different areas.
Areas other than Park Avenue.
Okay.
Right.
But we know from all we've done.
We've known that for a long time.
It's made a minimal impact on problems going into the woods.
The green infrastructure that we have installed is only along five blocks of Park Avenue. Okay? That's a minor part of our downtown area. Now, if I can take the map that you currently see up there and make a major impact on that entire area, we are going to impact most of the downtown core at that point.
I guess, Larry, that 2009 report, which I think we all ought to take a look at, indicates that if you fixed all 105 acres, it would have an immeasurable impact.
And again, Councilman Warren, I understand exactly what you're saying. That was before it was installed, and as Mr. Pierce said a while ago, how well what was installed is working has even surprised Clemson. And I keep going back to February. We had the wettest February on record, or one of the wettest Februarys on record. We had over 9 inches of rain. We did not flood out our streets. And that all would have gone down to the woods. None of that went to the woods on our five-block area. So does it work? Yes. Can I quantify it? I really can't. Yeah. That's why I think what we have here is going to help us quantify what we're looking for to be able to go out into this other area that we see, all of this area. Now, what Clemson said in 2009 was without the data that they've gotten now from the green infrastructure.
Larry, yes, you've got a couple hands up. Why don't you rest for a couple minutes? Don't go away.
Okay.
Jim, first.
I received the link to the final report that Clemson issued in February of this year on the first phase of the green infrastructure. They'd make no claims of any statistically significant reduction in the water going into Hitchcock Woods. There may be observations, but they make no claims. It's not statistically significant. $3.3 million got you no significant reduction.
Where did you get that?
I got the link from Councilman Ebner. It's the link to Clemson's final report. And do you have the 2009 report, the Sand River assessment remediation?
I don't have it.
It's on page 9, and it wasn't Clemson that did that study. It was Clemson's consultant that they hired. And somebody has got to belly up to that and refute that of saying, when they clearly said there is not enough surface area in the green spaces within the city of Aiken to make enough of an impact on the water going in to Hitchcock Woods to reduce the size of that pipe.
So do you propose that we should do nothing?
No. I propose that you spend the money not on this grant, but to get another engineering company that does not have a vested interest in the outcome of the study to provide some alternatives. I think you guys and we taxpayers are being held hostage by the possibility of building a 7,500-foot long, 10-foot diameter pipe in Hitchcock Woods. We'll spend R&D on that rather than spend $16 million on that.
Do you agree eventually we're going to have a pipe of some sort?
I don't know. I'm not that expert. Clemson says you're going to have a pipe. That's their preferred alternative. My common sense tells me it's a stupid alternative. Why would you destroy the woods? That's going to be equivalent to building a mile and a half highway through Hitchcock Woods. It's going to have that kind of environmental damage. That's why I'm angry about it. It's a crazy option.
And of course, that's why we don't want it either.
That's why you're willing to spend possibly, instead of getting another option, it might be a whole lot more viable.
Yeah.
And that you can evaluate, do I spend more R&D money, or do I have another option other than building a highway in Hitchcock Woods?
I'm a recent addition to this debate, but I don't hear anybody saying they want to do a 7,500-foot, 10-foot diameter pipe.
Nobody wants to. Goodness gracious.
But I also heard you say that we've had engineer after engineer after engineer after engineer for four decades studying this and looking at ponds and lakes and everything else. It seems to me, I mean, this is water. I've developed stuff and had to deal with water, and it's like herding cats. And the problem is, if you don't know how many cats that you've got to collect, then you never know how many are still out there, what you still have to do.
Your next beat. Just a minute.
And so it seems to me you got to know how many cats you're trying to herd before you can come up with your solution, you know.
And it sounds like that's what we're trying to do. Now, whether it's the right way or not, but we're trying to get that information. Hopefully, we don't want any pipes, but we probably will have to have some size pipe, but maybe not. Hopefully not. Yes.
Do we have that report, by the way, that was issued in February of this year?
You should.
I don't have it. Yeah. Doug can send it to the city manager. It's a link to it. It's 115 pages long.
Yeah.
But if you could send that to the city manager, please, and Doug, I think would be good. He sent it to me, which I forwarded to some people. But if you do that, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. I'm Doug Raybould. I'm the executive director of Hitchcock Woods Foundation. It's now 2013, and we're talking about something that started back in 2008. So I just wanted to go back a little bit and review something that might shed some light. Without belaboring the point, this conversation has already gone on quite long. But in 2008, the City of Aiken, council and staff, Aiken County staff and some council members, SCDNR, SCDHEC, and US EPA, with a multitude of professors from Clemson, met downstairs for a period of 10 months. And the end result of that process was what's called the preferred alternative. It did call for a large pipe in the woods. The reason was that because the canyon has basically already done the excavation, you didn't need to do any excavation. The canyon was there. You lay a pipe in what was already a big wide ditch, and that pipe wasn't just to convey the water, that pipe was to store the water. It was to detain the water. It was instead of building a detention pond or detention ponds all throughout the watershed, it was the one giant long detention pond that would release the water slowly. That was a plan that City Council, everybody at those meetings, agreed upon. However, that plan had a little piece to it that said, let's try green infrastructure if we can get the community to have an appetite for it. And then US EPA saw the wisdom in doing that. It's a solution that US EPA is interested in seeing done throughout the country. And so for that reason, they gave Clemson a grant and the City of Aiken a grant to do a research project. So when you talk about the $3.34 million, that included a research component too, not just engineering, not just construction, but a long-term research project. It doesn't need to be, just doesn't need to recur. You now have the conclusions, you now have the data sets from that research project. And so in moving forward, a part of moving forward, that study says, these are the different things that were done. Mr. Pierce likes to call Park Avenue a la carte. Now you can just about everything that can be thought about, permeable pavement and permeable asphalt and rain gardens and bioswales. And what Clemson learned was that there was a degree of redundance in what they did. But they didn't know until they tried it at this particular location with these particular rain dynamics what they would find. That's why it was a research project. And so they learned from it and they said, actually, you can just do permeable pavement and you don't need to go into the parkway to do bioswales or rain gardens. Or you could do the work within the parkway and not need to do the pavement. So it was instructive in moving forward. It told you what the technologies were. It told you what the technologies could accomplish. And then that was part of the story. Next part of the story is, where do you apply these? A couple of ideas were being kicked around by the city, or let's do a little project here, let's do a little project there. And we said, you know, how do we know that we're going to get the best bang for the buck in those locations? And so that was the genesis of this new project, this new research project, to determine where can we best identify the areas where we have the magnitude of flashing of stormwater and the volume of stormwater. And then once we know where those areas are, we pick from the a la carte and we say, do we do a rain garden? Do we do a bioswale? Do we do permeable pavement? What do we do? And so then you have those options to look at one by one in moving forward. So we have two different studies now. One was to test the infiltration technologies. And now the second project is to look at how do we find places where we can most intelligently apply them. And because of the research that will be done as a consequence of this project, there's more of a likelihood that the city might also find grant resources because we're moving forward intelligently. Does that help?
Yes, Pete. Yes, sir.
I'm Peter Gray. I live in Aiken. I've been here since 1953, with the exception of a year and a half when I was assigned to a research project in Canada. I've been at Savannah River since 1953. I retired from there about 14 years ago. I live at the moment at the very end of Berry Road, where there's an entrance to Hitchcock Woods. So my house looks on Hitchcock Woods. I've owned five houses in Aiken. Four of them have been right on the edge of Hitchcock Woods. I've been a member of the Board of Trustees of Hitchcock Woods for a little over 30 years. Last week I was honored by being voted in as a trustee emeritus in Hitchcock Woods. I've been on the Stormwater Committee of Hitchcock Woods, and yet, for some reason, I'm not sure why, I have been invited to only one of the meetings between Hitchcock Woods and the city. A large amount of stuff that you're talking about right now never came to me, even though I'm an engineer by degree from university and a member of the Hitchcock Foundation for the past 30 years. Some of these things are fairly new to me. One of the things that I think, if you want to talk about a pipe through the woods, one of the things I think you might decide is not worth it is a 10-foot diameter pipe that goes down Sand River, turns around, comes back up Sand River, turns around and goes back down Sand River. This is representing a long, three-legged storage tank. I think you ought to look at it before you do this kind of thing, or even the one that's how many feet long? It's just one straight through the woods. That's not got the capacity to store the water that comes into Hitchcock Woods. There are two pipes that come into Hitchcock Woods. One is from downtown and one is from the south boundary area. The two pipes meet just before they go underneath south boundary. If the one that comes from the area near the building, it used to be Red Cross, I forget the name of it right now, but it's on Lawrence Street just before you go over the new bridge,
Christ
over the railroad
Central.
Tracks.
What's that? It's Christ Central. Central.
Yeah, okay, fine. I still think of it as the Red Cross building.
Mm-hmm.
The stormwater from the downtown city area collects in a pipe right there. If you took a pipe right from that building and go along the railroad tracks until you get to Dibble Road, the height of that pipe is enough force because of the height of the water to provide a head to drive the water without any pumps. You don't need a pump. You don't need an electric motor. You don't need 110 volts or 440 volts or anything like that to drive it. The water would go all the way to where the railroad tracks cross Dibble Road.
on the far side of Dibble Road, pardon me, on the far side of the railroad tracks at Dibble Road. You could ask the foundation. I dare say they would agree with you. They'll give you a 10-foot diameter, 10-foot wide path right along the edge of Dibble Road, all the way until you get to where the water comes out of the woods, close to the gasworks, where the water from all of the water from Hitchcock Woods goes underneath the Dibble Road bridge on the highway there. Here's a solution that some people have said, oh, it won't work. It will work, and it worked beautifully, and it requires no power to operate it, and it never puts any effort in terms of destroying the beauty of Hitchcock Woods. I think the canyon that you have at the headwaters of Sand River is in itself, even though it's being destroyed by stormwater right at the moment, been there all along, and it's a unique part of Hitchcock Woods. And I think to try and put a barrier pipe, a 10-foot diameter pipe, there in the Sand River Canyon would totally destroy the beauty of it. It's a compromise on keeping Hitchcock Woods the way it is. I want to also say, since I'm here for the moment, I totally support Jim Kelly and what he just said to you. I think we ought to look at the engineering of it rather than spend a lot of money on these research studies. The answers are right there in front of you. Thank you.
Mr. Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Gray.
Greg, Peter,
oh,
Lessie.
Hi, Lessie. How are you?
Fine. Very interested in what you were saying and based on your engineering experience. But tell me what basis, based on your recommendations, are you making your analysis that the old Red Cross building will help to reduce that flow? But it's a better recommendation. Is that because you've observed what you're sharing with us, your longevity, what basis?
Here the microphone is here.
That's
I'm
right.
Sorry.
Yeah. You're good.
Let's not base anything I say on my longevity
okay.
with Savannah River. I was told by the city that when this first phase of work was done, there would be a large amount of data that would come out on how these modifications performed and what water quantities came from where and all the rest of that. I haven't seen any of that report so far. I don't know whether it's available or not, but I was told by the city that the two pipes, the one from downtown and the other one from south boundary, come together just before they go underneath Sand River, south boundary.
Right.
Keep getting words
that's
mixed
okay.
up.
That's all right.
Just before they go under the pipe, the road at south boundary. One is a 4-foot diameter pipe, and one is a 6-foot diameter pipe. Those two go into the 10-foot diameter pipe. 10-foot diameter pipe is just an overkill. If you've got a 4-foot pipe full and a 6-foot pipe full, that's only about half the water that it takes to fill up a 10-foot diameter pipe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the city has a 10-foot diameter pipe at that point. If the pipe from the downtown carries all the water successfully from the downtown area in 4 feet diameter, put a 4-foot diameter pipe right from where the Red Cross building is. Run it along the railroad tracks. When you get to Dibble Road, go under the railroad tracks and then go on the edge of Hitchcock Woods property, the foundation property, and put a ditch in there until you get to the place where all the water comes out of Hitchcock Woods and goes under Dibble Road. Mm-hmm. I think just the fact that the 4-foot diameter pipe is there right now
mm-hmm.
means that 4 feet diameter would work. You know, 10-foot diameter pipe, not at all. Have I answered you?
Yes, you have.
Okay.
Thank you.
The data is available on the Internet. The Clemson's Institute has posted all the data they've collected, all of it.
I haven't seen any of it, and I was told that I would see it.
Okay. It's posted
on
that website.
Richard, the other thing is, here I am, a member of the Hitchcock Foundation Stormwater Committee. I've been to one meeting with the city, one meeting.
Yes, sir.
And I'm the engineer in the... We've got, 24, 25 members in the foundation. I'm the only one that's an engineer, and I haven't been invited to any of the meetings except one.
Well, you're welcome to any meeting, Peter. We're glad to have that. I'm just, we sent
no,
out
I'm,
in
the... I'm just thinking, if I...
Yes, sir, I was
as
just...
As a process that's been completed with Clemson and the green areas in the city, it was all going on, and I was told that we would have information...
We posted it. Yes, sir, it did.
I don't know.
Yes, sir, it did. It came to you because it was in the Water Bill newsletter. We had the link to the information from Clemson posted, and all the data can be found there?
I never received that.
Yes, okay. It was in the water bill newsletter that we sent to all the water.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Somewhere there was a gap.
I got you.
If I'm supposed to help the foundation on this whole effort, I should see it.
Yes, we'll send it to you.
I wonder why the foundation didn't advise you, Pete.
Well, right.
Members of the foundation, why didn't they advise you?
I don't know why, Fred. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. But look, if the 10-foot diameter pipe that goes underneath South Boundary and goes down through the woods and feeds into the headwaters of the canyon of Sand River, if that 10-foot diameter pipe is there just because it's overkill, that's fine. It's got a 4-foot diameter pipe from downtown and a 6-foot diameter pipe from South Boundary feeding into it. The 10-foot diameter pipe is overkill, complete overkill.
Mr. Gray, I guess what harm is there in us trying to measure the amount of water in the most statistically accurate way possible?
Nothing. There's no harm with that at all.
Is that what we're trying to do here, or no? Am I missing it? I mean, to me, that's what it looks like we're doing, is simply taking the most advanced technology available to us and trying to measure this in the most accurate way possible.
I think that's fine if that's what's been done.
That's because I'm not voting on a pipe tonight.
No, exactly.
And so I don't really know that we should be even talking about a 10-foot pipe tonight, frankly. All we're trying to do is, it seems to me, and I could be missing it, all we're trying to do is, and I appreciate your background as an engineer, so you may appreciate this even more than I, but getting the very best data that we can to determine what does need to be done. And if we can come up with a 4-foot diameter pipe running down, like you said, man, that sounds dynamite. But it seems to me that what we're talking about tonight is simply trying to get the most accurate data that we can using the most advanced technology available to us.
I agree with you on that point completely. It appears to me that the data may be available somewhere. If the downtown area, which is where the green area work has been done, the downtown area can be taken care of with a 4-foot diameter pipe, why not just continue the 4-foot diameter pipe down along the railroad tracks, along the edge of Hitchcock Woods? I dare say that the foundation supports you on that.
You'll have a friend in me if that turns out to be the case.
Well, in the foundation, among other things, I was chairman for 3 years a while back. I carry a little clout with them. I think I could talk every one of them into giving some yardage along the edge of the Dibble Road to put a trench in, put the pipe in it, cover the whole thing over. I like the sound of that. I don't like the sound of
a
10-foot diameter pipe or a 4-foot diameter pipe,
right,
or any pipe.
But we're not
in
really
the canyon.
We're not really debating the pipe tonight.
Okay, I know we're not. But I think that Mr. Kelly just said something about not spending the $367,000 to do another study. We may have all the information we need right now to decide what's the best thing to be done.
Well, we have the information now on the pilot project, which was in
just
Park
the pilot Avenue. Project, right?
The this
existing
is additional data,
right?
Well,
okay, but if the the
question that Mr. Kelly had, in addition to that, was whether this is a sole source contract for Clemson, and should we have gone out for an RFP, and are we leaning more because there was an EPA grant for $3.3 million. Clemson got that grant. Now the 367, they're getting that grant. And what I'm in limbo with, if there's another $16 million or so dollars that this project is going to cost, will we sole source that to them as well? So all these things are
okay.
Staying with me here.
I agree with Mr. Kelly on not doing a sole source. You know, we as taxpayers want our taxpayer money that goes to any entity to be wisely spent. And one of the first things I think is you look for who can do the best job. You look at the specifications, you put them out, you hear from 3 or 4 people who propose to do the work. You evaluate what their cost is and what their record, their history, their performance record is, and all of that. I'm saying I think that what I was told when this whole effort started three, four, 5 years ago, we were going to get data. I haven't seen the data. The data may be there. It may be able to tell you exactly what ought to be done. If the data are there, then you can figure out the right way to do things. I'm saying there are two pipes that go down and they join just before you get to the South Boundary Road. One is 4 feet and it takes the city. Mm-hmm. One is 6 feet and it takes the mm-hmm. South Boundary area. If a 4 foot pipe will handle the city up to the point where it joins with the other and goes into the 10 foot mm-hmm. boundary, it'll do that. You can take it right along the railroad tracks. You could take it along Nibble Road. You could take it out at the point where all the water coming out of the woods goes into the next portion that flows ultimately to Savannah River.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Pete. Thank you. Mr. Shealy, please. Dr. Shealy.
Thank you,
sir. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Sorry, this is sweet again.
My name is Harry Shealy, and I've been here before, and I'm reluctantly here tonight. I vowed not to have to say anything tonight, but I had to. And I am very much in favor of this grant for several reasons. I believe in collecting whatever you want to call it, but it's called baseline data. And to try to find out what you've got so you can deal with the problem. I would like to correct a couple of things that about the green infrastructure. I'm excited about it, not necessarily because it has reduced the flow of water into Hitchcock Woods, but it puts water into the aquifer. I've been preaching that for years, that if we don't recharge our aquifers, you know, we're all going to be, you know, drinking sand or something like that, or desalinating the oceans, which is an expensive proposition. So I'm very much in favor of putting as much of this green infrastructure in that you can possibly can in order to prevent, you know, water from standing on hard surfaces and just evaporating, or when it runs off into to the woods. It really does cause bad erosion down there, and it flashes off down on through the valley until it hits the Savannah River, and it never percolates into the water table. It's going too fast. So I'm very much in favor of trying to find some data that we're talking about, this map over here tonight. I also want to tell, and I disagree with Peter about he likes the way the Grand Canyon looks. I do, too, because you can see the stratigraphy of the geological record there. That's my favorite part about it. But what I don't like is when the water comes rushing through there, and this has been going on for years, it's picking up sediment, and it's taking it down further in the woods. Up until about the mid-1990s, the sedimentation was settling out across Dibble Road over in what we euphemistically refer to as Peggy's Pond. And she's standing out there looking at me. But but it's over on that property the city now has acquired. And it has loaded that. And about 1995, it began to back into the woods because it had already loaded up downstream. This is simple stuff if you go look. And it caused the deforestation of a whole swamp area there because of the sediment load. It killed all the trees. And it's going to back up even further and kill more stuff. So it's more than just, you know, water coming into the woods. It's killing plants because of the sediment load that it's carrying. So I'm very much in favor of you guys approving this thing. And that's about all I have to say, except if you didn't hear who I was, my name is Harry Shealy. I'm sorry, Sarah. And I am... have been with the Hitchcock Woods for a very long time, like Peter, and I've worked with him for many years. I've worked with Larry over here. We've had a number of meetings together. And up until about 5 years, I was head of the Stormwater Committee, and somebody else took it over, thank goodness, and I thought I was through with it, but not now. And I do have some role on the Hitchcock Foundation. I am the current chairman of the Hitchcock Foundation again. And but I just had to say those things. I really support y'all approving this resolution tonight, a recommendation, I should say. I'll answer any questions.
Harry, I remember after I was elected mayor, shortly thereafter, I started going to these quarterly meetings that we had.
Yes.
And that goes back to 91.
I would say that my involvement on the stormwater stuff went back to the late 80s.
Well, I'm sure yours did, but... how many, I wish we had all the studies that we could pile up here, because it would be quite something. It would probably be that many.
Study.
We've had study after study over these years about what to do. And I'm impressed a little bit, a lot, I guess, with Dr. Eidson. He's a native Aikenite. He wants the best for Aiken. He played in the parks, and he played down in down in the Sand River and all that stuff as a growing up fellow. I think he's very smart. The one reason that I'm leaning, and Jim, I appreciate everything you've said and everyone else, I'm leaning toward doing this with Clemson, is because he knows the background of everything that's been done so far and how it comes together with what we're talking about tonight, trying to find out just where all the water is coming from, getting that baseline. To change at this point, my goodness, how much is that going to cost? And so maybe this costs a little bit more. You know, at least we know that this team knows the background. They started from day one. To me, it's a natural that we go with them, at least on this particular thing. Now, what we do in the future might be something else. But we've got this money. I think we ought to go ahead with the experts that we've got already that have worked on this. And I can recall now that certain members of the foundation have actually said that they notice a difference in the water coming down. Now, I don't know if you have, Doug.
If there is any.
Doug, I think you've said that before, just from what's been done. Now, we may never know exactly how much difference, but if it's working, I don't disagree also that maybe eventually we'll have to put in, I mean, we might have to put in a pipe, and we might have to go, like Pete said, around a little bit and not through. But these are things that we're not quite there yet, unfortunately, to determine.
One thing I've always been in favor of is lessening the amount of water before it gets to the woods.
Absolutely. Now,
however you can do that, I'm much in favor of it. And that's really the problem, you know, and not slowing down the velocity of it, which they did with gabions at one time, and there was another large expenditure of money to reduce the velocity. And I kept, this was in the days of a previous city manager, and I used to say, but you're not reducing the volume. And that was what I always have advocated, reducing the volume. If we can do it with green infrastructure, I am all in favor of it. And I think it's a good idea to collect good baseline data. So anyway, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Well, this is 1 cent sales tax money, right?
Yes.
And it was already been voted on by the taxpayer to be spent in this way, right?
Yes.
On a study and dealing with the stormwater going into Hitchcock Woods.
What were the words? No, but do you know what the exact?
I didn't bring the ballot with me, Mayor. I could. It was just a listed project. It says
it's a legitimate Woods. Part. The money is set aside for Hitchcock Woods remediation. So if this is considered as aiding Hitchcock Woods remediation, which I'm not sure Mr. Kelly would agree with, but if you agree that it is part of Hitchcock Woods, then it would be appropriate.
Before we go to vote, I'd like, and she's standing in the door, and I want to hear from her because I know her passion for history and in the woods. Peggy, do you want to make a comment?
I'll turn the podium over to you, Peggy.
You have to come over here.
You have to come over there.
I know.
My husband's not waiting on me. I was just anxious to see the results of this. As a real estate developer, I know that you can't size a pipe until you know how much water is going to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love that it not be 10 feet wide. I know the bigger the pipe, the more expensive it is per linear foot. I've walked through some pipes that we put in, and they get real expensive, and they're a lot more expensive now. So I'm all for harvesting rainwater and rain gardens, and I don't know any of the data. I haven't read the water bill either, but I think that Clemson should be good stewards of our money. So I would have to say that I'm in favor of it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. Any other comments from anyone?
I'd like to make a comment. It's always frustrating to have to choose between two credible sides, and quite frankly, I'm not comfortable enough in this particular issue to want to make that decision. I'm impressed with what Mr. Kelly says. I would like to have seen that 2009 report. I did get a copy of the link today, and I read the executive summary of it, but I probably would like to read more of it. What we have is a basic disagreement. Mr. Kelly is maintaining that the data that we're going to get is not going to be useful data in resolving the problem, and Dr. Eisen's not here to defend his request for the grant, and I have to say that I am very impressed with what he's done for the city with the infrastructure work that he's done. I mean, he's learned a great deal, and I'm just not comfortable making a decision supporting anything until I look at that 2009 report, and I think council ought to consider having another session on this item until we can look at the 2009 data and try to resolve the problem. The ultimate approach on this is to fix Hitchcock Woods, and we do that simplistically. Nobody can argue you reduce the water going in there, but there seems to be different ways of doing it. I don't know that the grant is going to give us any data that's going to be meaningful in helping us get that ultimate objective. So I'm really not comfortable at this point supporting it. I wish we'd take another session. I wish we could all take a look at that 2009 report, perhaps make sure that Mr. Kelly has seen it, ask Dr. Eisen to come back, get an input from Hitchcock Foundation, because it's very critical for their future as well. So
one of the things, I may be totally wrong on this, but I believe part of the remediation effort, that the $3.5 million that was spent, was going to measure the amount of water that actually landed on the city during the rains, and there was going to be a facility to measure how much of that would reduce or increase the water going into the Sand River. And somehow or another, I'm a little bit perplexed now. We don't have that information. I mean, why do we have this intricate measuring capacity in the parkways and what have you, and yet no way to compare it? I mean, what are we measuring?
Well,
simple rain gauge would have done the same thing if we're not really measuring the difference between what goes in the Sand River prior to the installation and after the installation.
Well, it is measured. And the data is available through the Institute's website. That's always been available throughout the whole project.
What percentage is it? Can we get that information?
Well, again, it's what Larry said in his initial presentation. There is a margin of error in the study, just like when they do the political polls. And with the margin of error, there was a measurable reduction. And there was effect from the project being installed.
My understanding was Larry said the measurement differential was within the margin of error.
That's what I just said.
So, I mean,
sorry, I've been measuring.
And again,
if we're measuring something and it's within the measure margin of error, what are we measuring? I mean, I could have gone up and I could have said,
yes, and again, we'll do whatever council wants to do. This was a pilot project. They did research. There was equipment that measured the flow rate of the water, and that was the problem, was the storm water runoff. This additional data collection is for the next phases to find out where the appropriate installation would need to go to help meet what the citizens have directed, which is to abate the water runoff in the Hitchcock Woods. Now, I mean, we can have Professor Eisen here. That's fine. You know, we can certainly provide council with these reports. Again, we provided them before. But the only thing we're trying to do is to take this area that Larry has identified and collect data by putting measuring devices through our existing stormwater system.
Well,
then come back to you with those results.
Obviously, we need a little bit more information. What concerns me is, one, you know, we were told we could measure the difference, and obviously if it's within the margin of error, it doesn't exist.
It does exist.
It does exist, but nobody could provide that information. So consequently, we need to go back on that. The second point is, this business about the 2009 study where it says if the whole of the cities was totally, perforated sidewalks or streets or, the permeable road, it wouldn't have a significant effect on what goes into the the Sand River. I mean, yeah. What? I really am at a loss. What are we really trying to accomplish?
I'd like to make a suggestion, okay. And that is that we continue this item and invite Dr. Eitzen to be here in our next meeting or whatever meeting we can get him to.
Okay.
And let's just talk this thing through with him. That is something we're missing, him being here, to be able to talk from the basis of his experience and what he sees, and I think that's very important.
It is.
It seems to be, and I agree, it,
Question.
What do? You know, you could
we all need
flip
to
a
receive,
coin almost. But,
those that have not received the link should receive the link. It's probably a costly report to prepare for each of the council members, but...
Yeah, you want to do it on the link.
Well, unless you want to talk some more about it, I move that we do this.
Well, there's a motion already on the floor, so they don't have to withdraw the motions.
Well, there's no motion. You have a motion to carry over?
Yes. Continue.
Second.
To continue. That's a proper term, isn't it, Gary? Okay, good.
I'll second it.
I remembered something. We've got a motion and a second. Okay, any other discussion?
Do we have to cancel the initial motion?
Yes, because there's a motion already on the floor.
No, we didn't.
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Have not had a motion?
No.
No.
That's no motion.
There is no motion.
On my paper.
The motion is the motion to continue.
Okay, you ready? Show of hands to continue and invite Mr. Eitzen to come. As soon as... possible for him to be.
I would recommend that both speakers or any of the speakers that came tonight be notified of when the meeting is held and be given whatever documents the council's given.
Okay, absolutely. Okay, show of hands, please. Okay, all right, passes unanimously. Very good. Well, that was a good discussion, that's for sure. Short, too. Okay.
Today was going to be a short meeting.
Let's see, we're over.
That'll teach you. Here you go.
Okay, turn the page, and it's a request for waiver from the city code regarding garage sales.
I received a letter from Jill Ryan. Jill owns the business York Cottage Estate Sales. She's conducted numerous estate sales in Aiken for a very long time, 10 or 15 years, I think. And she has a special situation regarding the Jane and Bob Talbert family. They have a house, Jane and Bob Talbert, who was a dentist in Aiken for years, had a house at 155 Greenville Street Northwest. It is absolutely packed full of items that, since the Talberts were avid collectors, as you see from her letter. She typically will have a sale on Friday morning, and there's a tag price for the items. Then Saturday morning she has a sale, and there's a reduced price for the items. Just the sheer volume, and the family tried to reduce the inventory of the items to be sold on a sale they had this past fall. But still, in Jill's professional opinion, there's no way 2 days is going to cover it. She's written to ask that she either be allowed to do the estate sale Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, or in the alternative, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and it's the weekend after the Masters. So that would be April 18th, 19th, or 20th, or April 19th, 20th, and 21st. The existing city code limits a garage sale, which is a little bit different creature than a estate sale, to 2 consecutive days.
And we don't have anything for a state sale?
No, sir. We don't have a separate provision for that.
Well, I suggest we do it. But how do we, in the future, how do we determine when there's enough nice things for 2 days or 3 days?
And that is a legitimate concern. It's just this Talbert estate is particularly large, in Ms. Ryan's opinion, having done sales. And again, this is something staff can take a look at. I've encouraged Ms. Ryan to provide us with some suggestions, some concerns, since she has done estate sales in this area. There are certainly other companies that conduct these kind of sales. She just has an immediate need because the family was interested in doing something this spring as far as what they're trying to accomplish with the estate they're handling.
Well, my personal view would be to go Thursday and not Sunday.
My question was, I'm not familiar with the area, but is it near a church or?
It's right across the street from the synagogue.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, Mayor.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Hang on. If it's across the street from the synagogue, well, that would involve Saturday.
It would.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh, is it from the crossing the synagogue?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, Elliot will see
the opposite corner.
It's across the parkway, right?
Right. And again, I've had a conversation with Chief Barranco, and since there would be services on Saturday, we'll make sure that the members of that synagogue would have an opportunity to park and that the garage sale would not cover up those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. You need a motion?
Yes. A motion, sir.
The motion is to approve this waiver. But that the sale be on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I second.
Okay, any discussion?
I don't know what time the synagogue services would be, but would it be?
That includes what?
They say one. What?
Well, starts at one? Recommending with the
the sale is synagogue. Typically 9 to noon, so we'll check on that and make sure that.
If maybe she could have it in the afternoon on Saturday or so it
well,
doesn't.
Well, no, we. If we could just leave it up to public safety, please,
that's fine.
Instead of
putting
us in the corner, it would be better.
That's fine with me.
Okay. All right. Any other? We've got a motion second. Any discussion? Any more? Show of hands, please. Passes unanimously. Okay, Mr. City Manager.
We just had a question regarding the budget. Each year, council has had a work session in advance of reading the first reading of the ordinance. Last year, we did the work session at 4 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. That would be April 30th again this year at 4 p.m. I just wanted to check and make sure the council would be available for a budget work session 4 p.m. April 30th of this year.
What day of the week is that again?
It's a Tuesday.
Who's staying here?
I'll be out of town.
I think you missed last year, too.
I'll be out of town. Yeah. It's okay.
Oh, let's look at another date then. I forget.
You'll be out that whole week?
I'm actually out of town till almost mid-May.
Till mid-May?
Okay, so you're going to miss first reading of a budget ordinance anyway.
Which is... Yeah,
April
29th. I'll miss the first meeting in May.
We were going to bring the budget first reading on May 13th.
Richard, you said that you would prefer late in April to give you adequate time to be prepared.
Yes, sir. We have to not only get the final revenue estimates, but we have to print up the books for everybody as well.
Well, looks like we might miss Steve then.
April 30th is bad for me. April 30th is bad for me too, but if it works for everybody, I can try to make it work.
Who has another day? I forgot to bring my calendar.
Some of us don't have their iPhones with them, so.
Yeah, look up your iPhone, Dave.
There's Thursday, May 2nd.
May 2nd, Thursday. It's a Thursday. Why don't we pick a couple of dates and then people call you?
Any day other than the 30th of that week works for me.
I've done work.
That doesn't work, Reggie?
It really doesn't, Mayor, because I don't hear back.
That's okay.
I don't hear back. We were all in the room.
That's only one of about 10 suggestions.
Gone from the,
Tuesday, April 30th, Wednesday, May 1st, Thursday, May 2nd.
What works for you in April?
Probably virtually any day but the 30th.
I can make either one of those. One or two.
23rd. We have a meeting on the
23rd. I cannot have the budget ready before April 23rd. I can't.
Any comments about May 1st or 2nd?
We
all know. Anybody know for sure?
About what?
Except me.
May 1st and 2nd?
I can be there.
Okay, that's two of us.
Of course, I know.
Okay, the others can call in.
I have my calendar.
May 1st and 2nd.
I'm okay for the 1st.
Okay, that's three.
You want to just say May 1st?
That's a Wednesday.
Surely we'll get one or two more.
I think I'm okay. I don't have my calendar, but that doesn't.
All right.
I can't remember anything on my calendar that day.
If that doesn't work, we're going to have a couple meetings sent before
that. We'll let Richard know tomorrow.
Yep. Okay, so I have it tentatively down for Wednesday, May 1st.
Yep. At 4 p.m.
At 4 p.m.
Oh, are we meeting on May 27th? I assume we're going to. That's Memorial Day again.
Well, that was the other question, and again, we could put that on the agenda for next item, was whether you wanted to meet Memorial Day. We did not last year.
Yeah. The council voted to cancel that meeting. That needs to be on the agenda for sure.
Yeah. Huh? The answer is no.
It's a non-meeting day.
Right.
Nobody's going to show.
I think you're right.
What will be the location of that meeting on the
205?
Here.
Here.
Right here.
Okay.
Okay. Did you have
Thank you.
Anything else, Richard?
No, sir. Not this time.
Okay. All right. That was the band adjourned then.
You've been very kind of you. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, you better.
Good job.
All right, cool. Good.
Queenie,
that's right.